Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on the 18th floor here on Wacker. And we're here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday. That means it's Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in. Anything. Any artist, any song, anything. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So coming up on the show, you know, there's been a lot of... every day, there are reports of cyber attacks and hackings that are happening on a regular basis. And it's... you know, from personal stuff to big companies to, well, you know, in some cases, state capitals get hit with ransomware attacks and other cyber attacks. And so we wanted to bring in someone to talk about these, an absolute expert on why these happen, how they happen, and what you can do to stay safe. And so Dr. Faisal Akawi is going to join us. He is the faculty director of the Master of Science and Information Systems program at Northwestern School of Professional Studies. And we're going to talk about some of these recent news stories, you know, of passwords being stolen, of cyber attacks, and how you can learn more about this and stay safe, and also about how you can be a part of some cybersecurity classes and boot camps that they offer over at Northwestern School of Professional Studies. So we'll get all that information from Dr. Akawi when he joins us after 1:30. And on the tech front, we are also going to talk about some tech stuff here, including how 15 tech companies' sites and gadgets got their names. There's always interesting stories behind that kind of stuff, and we'll have some fun with that. Also, you know, Apple doesn't always have hits. Not everything Apple releases is... everything Apple releases does not go perfectly. So they actually have some flops. We're going to talk about some of the Apple flops in the past, and then we're going to talk about inventions in general, you know, because we're talking gadgets and stuff like that. So we're talking inventions in general, and we're going to start with inventions that women are responsible for, and then we'll just get into general invention talk as well. That's all coming up this morning, and anytime you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also your Wildcard Wednesday requests, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And you can also stay connected with us. It's a great way to stay connected with us is on our Facebook page at facebook.com, Nick D Show. It's updated during the show. Whatever we're talking about is posted up there. And so there you go. And you can also download our podcasts. There's a lot of people listen to our podcast, and we appreciate that, and thank you for that. If you can't listen live, well, then subscribe to the podcast. Go to iTunes or any place where you get your podcasts. Subscribe. It's free. Every single second of every single show is put into podcast form, and you can catch up and not miss anything. So go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. It's free. It will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So, Tom, I don't think you know the at your leisure, bro story, do you?
I do not, no.
All right, I'll have to tell you that. It involves Daniel Baldwin.
Okay, all right.
One of the Baldwin brothers.
Of course.
It involves a guy that I know who drove a limo in L.A., and it involved a very adventurous night of driving Daniel Baldwin around L.A. And he needed to, he had, Danny Baldwin was like, they picked up hookers.
Naturally.
He got out of the limo in the middle of the intersection while Daniel Baldwin was in a limo with a couple of hookers.
Cool.
And then he got back in when Daniel Baldwin summoned him to come back in. And then he said, you got to go to the ATM, man. And he's like, okay. And he's like, yeah, bro, just go to the ATM and take out about $250 from your account and I'll pay you back. Okay, bro? So he's like, well, okay. Goes to the ATM, gets $250. He's like, what do you need the $250 for, may I ask? And he goes, for the crack, bro. So the guy gives him $250. They go, they make the exchange, and then he's like, hey, don't take the highway, man. And he's telling him different alternate rates to go, and he's like, all right, I'm going to have to turn left here. He's like, at your leisure, bro. And he said, at your leisure, he said, at your leisure, bro, about 10 times during this weird night.
I think we'll go
to the ATM at your leisure, bro. I'm going to have to get on the highway. I'm going to have to take the long way at your leisure, bro. So I was at the Factory Theater Company when this story went around. And one of the guys whose friend was the limo driver was in the Factory Theater. And it became the catchphrase. We said it for like a year and a half straight. Like every time we would do something in the theater, we'd be like, at your leisure, bro. So that's the at leisure, bro. So when I tell people to subscribe to the podcast and they can listen at their leisure, bro, that's where it comes from. We can thank Daniel Baldwin for that. So
great guy.
Tom Hush, how are you, Tom?
Doing good.
Yeah,
how are you?
I'm all right. So we're here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. It always gets wild, as you know now. So 312-981-7200. We'll play those a little bit later on. After the 2 o'clock news, we'll jump in on that. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. And hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
Can I correct myself quickly?
Yeah.
I'll use this moment because it's the first time I've been on the air since I mistakenly said that the Hawks face elimination tonight. Tom Hush, your producer, corrected me. They are eliminated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was busy when I came in with the election.
But
I didn't see it.
You were busy because there was an election tonight, and you were in the newsroom being busy?
And let me qualify that, because it was pretty obviously early that Lightfoot had won, but there were 15 aldermanic runoff races that I had to dig into, so I missed that.
I
apologize to Blackhawks fans.
Yeah, they're out of it. The Avs won, so they're numerically eliminated. But they made a great run of it, man. It went down to the last two games of the season.
You know, had they had a little bit of a better first half, that, you know, because they were turning it around, it looked like. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. It's sad. It's disappointing. The Hawks have
back
been
now.
Yeah.
Two
seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but speaking of the, you're keeping an eye on the runoffs here. And my neighbors to the east are my neighbors in the eastern in ward 33.
Oh yeah.
They're just
right.
My neighbor. I'm in 39. I'm in ward 39.
That's right. That's my old ward.
Which one? 33. Yeah. 33. Well, that's my old ward too. When I lived in Albany Park.
Right.
But they've got a runoff still going. It's too close to call. Correct. In the 33rd ward.
It is. Yeah. And both of the candidates have spoken. We heard from Deb Mell. She says that they're counting mail-ins, so she's certainly not conceding as she's counting mail-ins, and still says that she's going to win. So we'll have to see. Her challenger as well. We heard from her earlier tonight, and she says that they fought a hard race, and that her campaign was built with working people, and that they're not giving up. So we'll see. There's a couple that are too close to call.
Yeah. There's a few. I was in the newsroom with you before, and you were showing me some of the stuff. So it's still going, man. I mean, I know obviously the mayoral election was over pretty quickly.
Right. That was a handily defeat.
Yeah, it was. Tom, do we have access to a certain Fleetwood Mac song? Landslide. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, Vic is keeping an eye on that. This could be days, though. We know how this stuff goes. We're not new to this. So it just seems like let me just say this: that this will be the first time in what months, 7, 8, 9 months, that we won't have political ads every 2 seconds on TV. I mean, seriously, mm-hmm. It's like 8 months worth of this stuff. You know,
That's
between the midterms and between. our local election, and then the runoff. There have been constant political ads on TV now since August, maybe something like that. Yeah. Since last August, I mean, come on.
Can you imagine if you were a person who hated politics and baseball? This, it just ends, and now baseball's on. You know, so and before you know it, we're gonna be into the Democratic.
Oh,
you know,
the Democratic. You know, yeah, I mean, the 2020 election is already.
I'm actually excited for that, but
it's gonna be crazy, man.
It should be crazy.
We're
getting looks back locally quickly. We're getting looks now at who voted today.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and. It's the same story. The 55 to 64 age range showed up today. It double what millennials did.
Man, come on.
It was a low turnout anyway, but that's what we're seeing.
Man, oh man. All right. Young people. You got to vote, man.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to tell you, man. Yeah, you got to vote, man. In all elections. Not, I mean, I know people come out for presidential elections. I realize that. That's like, you know, but I mean, like every election, you should vote. It's a privilege and an honor, you know. So anyway, so it wasn't a very exciting race for mayor for the runoff. It wasn't very exciting, but we still got some wards. And my neighbors just east of me, I hope whoever you voted for, you're happy with whoever wins. they're just right. I mean, Syria, my border for that. I think the border is. What is it like California, maybe? Because I'm west of that. So I'm in Ward 39, but yeah, 33 is still up for grabs. So
yeah, 39. Do I have that? Where is it? 39. I don't see it. Oh, here we go. Oh, a newcomer in your ward, Samantha Nugent.
Yes.
defeated Robert Murphy. So she'll replace longtime Alderman Margaret Loreno. Of course,
yep.
She's retiring. Yeah.
Yep. She's there for forever. So we have someone named Nugent running my ward.
Her name is Samantha, but she goes by Sam. So Sam Nugent, that's
Sam Nugent.
New alderman.
All right.
And I couldn't recall the challenger of Deb Mel, but it was Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez. Yeah. So okay. She's given a tough fight to Deb Mel.
Okay. All right. There we go. Wards are still happening. It's still election night.
Would you say that she has a stranglehold?
Oh, come on, man. Hold on.
All right. That one went over my head. I don't know.
It's Ted Nugent.
Okay.
That's a song by Ted Nugent. That's why I brought it up, because I think it's kind of funny that there's somebody named Nugent who's yeah. the alderman of my ward.
See her ride in on a buffalo.
Riding in on a buffalo. Guns for everybody. In Ward 39, everybody gets a gun.
That's how you defeat Robert Murphy, a buffalo, and run on a gun. You know, I don't think that the
yeah,
Samantha
I don't think
Nugent
that's, no,
ran
that's
on
not,
that.
No, we're joking
no,
around.
No, that's
we're
a
joking.
Joke.
It's a joke. We're joking around. All right. So listen, we're going to take a break. You guys ever wonder, Vicky, ever wonder why your sandwich comes with a pickle?
I do.
Oh, good. Because I'm going to tell you.
All the time.
Because if you said no, I'd be like, well, then you might want to not listen to the next segment. if you ever wonder, why does my sandwich come with a pickle? I've got the story behind that. And then after 1:30, we're going to talk cybersecurity with Dr. Faisal Akawi from Northwestern School of Professional Studies. That's all coming up. And we got some fun tech topics and inventions that we're going to be chatting about. And Wildcard Wednesday is happening. We'll get those going after 2 o'clock. So get your requests in at 312-981-7200. Anything at all, any artist, any song, anything. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're going to talk security, cybersecurity, with Dr. Faisal Akawi from the Northwestern School of Professional Studies. We get a lot of stories about what's happening in terms of the world of hacking and cybersecurity and all kinds of other things that we're going to jump into. That'll be coming up after 1:30. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. We'll start playing them after 2, and that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. So, Tom, have you ever wondered why your sandwich comes with a pickle?
I've honestly been pretty curious. Because they keep giving me the pickle.
You
and
get
I like the pickle.
But... I love pickles. But yeah, this was from Mental Floss put this, of course, out. And with any sandwich you buy in the United States, you will receive an all-too-familiar side dish without any explanation, the pickle. But why? How did the pickle become such an iconic part of our deli experience? Even the character in Fiddler on the Roof pondered this question. Where did the pickle come from? And more importantly, why does one always come with your sandwich? So pickles have been around for thousands of years. You a pickle fan, Tom?
I wasn't when I was a kid. I would have to pick them off my burgers, pick them off, you know, even my Chicago style hot dogs. I didn't want the pickle.
You didn't want the spear.
Yeah. But eventually my mom was like, just try it. Mm-hmm. And then I developed a taste for it. And now I love all pickle flavored things.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Well, you got some Lay's dill potato chips from our good friend Deanna.
Yeah. She was very kind to send, and they are delicious.
Yeah. They are good. Let's see. Pickles have been around for thousands of years and were considered a delicacy as early as 2400 BC. The pickle became popular in the U.S. when the first Jewish immigrants came to New York from Eastern Europe. Famous for their unique combinations of meat, Jewish delis in the city used the pickle as a palate cleanser. The acidity allows you to experience the sharp contrast in flavors and more fully appreciate the taste of your sandwich. It's scientific. That's why we're getting pickles. The specific deli that was first to place a pickle alongside a sandwich is unknown, but the practice quickly spread beyond Jewish delis. So it was a palate cleanser. Eating all kinds of meats, you got to have a palate cleanser. It's pickle time. Across the city of New York, the pickle's popularity grew, and by the 1930s, entrepreneurs became pickle vendors across the Lower East Side. In fact, there were famous pickle wars that occurred between the vendors competing for a monopoly on the sour sensation. Today, the pickle has been given its own festival in New York, which is celebrated in October. Once the pickle became a staple in New York, the tradition of including a pickle with a deli sandwich grew in appeal, and it quickly became a popular choice for an easy-to-prepare side dish across the U.S. In fact, the pickle is now the most commonly used side dish for a sandwich, and the combination makes up the majority of all pickle consumption. It's become so standard that restaurants no longer list it on the menu. Originally a Jewish tradition, the pickle has grown into a deli staple that's made its way onto every sandwich plate across America. And I'm a happy man because of it. I love pickles. Have you been to, Tom, you've been to New York?
I have not, unless you count LaGuardia Airport as New York.
No. You shouldn't. First of all, you shouldn't count LaGuardia Airport as an airport.
You should count it as hell.
Yeah. That's not even, LaGuardia doesn't even qualify as an airport. Let me just say that. There is, if you go to New York, and I highly suggest that you do because it's a fantastic city. I've been there many, 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 many times. They have the best deli in the world. They have a lot of amazing delis, obviously.
Katz's is the one.
Katz is unbelievable. And, of course, it's sort of legendary because the fake orgasm scene in When Harry Met Sally took place in Katz's.
Mm-hmm.
But you get not one pickle. They give you a plate of pickles at Katz's. And of course, if you order, like, you know, a Reuben or a pastrami or a corned beef, it's a foot tall. Like, it's ridiculous, the amount of meat that are on. You know, one sandwich is like three meals at Katz's. But they give you like a plate of pickles, not just one spear on the side. A plate. They give you, here's a plate, here's a, you know, here are
of
nine.
Just spears.
Just pickles. Just boom, right on there.
Love
yeah.
it.
And you can get that also at... have you been here? Now, this is in Chicago in the South Loop. Have you been to Manny's?
That I have.
Oh, man.
Good stuff. It's good stuff,
oh,
man.
Oh, man. And you got to love it because it's old school. It's cafeteria style.
Exactly.
Go in, get your tray. That's what you do at Katz's, too. At mm-hmm. Katz's, it goes so far as you get a number. Like, when you walk in, it spits out a ticket. And you get the number, and then you get your tray, and you go up, and you make your order. And that's it. But at Manny's, you got that steel rail that you're pushing the tray on, mm-hmm. like an old school cafeteria. There have been guys slinging corned beef and pastrami in that place for 35. Some guys doing it for like 30 years, cutting the meat and serving it to you. It's got a great big. They've expanded since before because it's so popular. But that's the best deli in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best deli in Chicago.
There's good places to get meats,
yeah.
But it's the best place to get, like, the sandwich,
experience. Well, I mean, you know, for me, the best place to get meats is Palina Meat Market.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
As soon as you walk into that place, when you inhale, oh, you've walked into the threshold of heaven. You open up, as soon as you, I mean, you can smell it outside Palina Meat Market. But when you open that door and go in, oh my God, get me a pillow. I'm going to sleep here.
Ooh, to meat.
Oh my God. So you can get great pickles there too. But anyway, so yeah, the pickle, that's the history. Palate started out as a palate cleanser, brought over by Jewish people from Eastern Europe. And now everybody has a spear, next to their sandwich when they get it. So thank you, Mental Floss, for that information. I've always wondered about that. All right, let's take a break. We've got the news coming up, and then after the news, we're going to talk all about cybersecurity, give you some info on that, on how you can keep safe. That's happening after the news, which is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. And that is any artist, any song, anything, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. We are here until 5 this morning. We're going to talk about some tech stories in the news. We've got some inventions that we're going to talk about, some of the best inventions that were invented by women who changed the world as we know it. We got some tech company stories, sites and gadgets, how they got their name. And Apple, believe it or not, Apple has had some flops in their time. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And more. So that's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. If you would like to join us for talk or text. Well, right now I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Faisal Akawi, who is the director of the Master of Science and Information Systems program at Northwestern School of Professional Studies. There have been a lot of cyber hacks happening lately. We hear about them every single day, and some of them are big, and some of them are kind of scary, and we wanted to have Dr. Akawi on to tell us how we can keep safe and to talk about some of the stories that have been happening in the world in terms of these tech security issues. And also, Northwestern Cybersecurity Boot Camp is going to be underway later this month, and we're going to get some information on that and how maybe you can join up for that. So let's get to this. Let's get to these stories about cybersecurity, important stuff that's happening in the world right now. We want you to be aware of it. So let's welcome Dr. Faisal Akawi to the show. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for inviting me over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about your background a little bit. How'd you get into the information systems and what you do now?
Oh, I've always been in information system. I have my undergraduate in electrical engineering. I hold a master in electrical engineering. Then I shifted gears into computer science. I hold a master in computer science and a PhD in computer science. My specialty is concurrent programming and aspect-oriented programming. And lately, because of the buzzword of cybersecurity, I sort of shifted gears into cyberspace world. I hold I am a certified ethical hacker, which is something I enjoy dearly and doing daily as part of what I do for Northwestern School of Professional Studies.
And so, have you always, when you were a child, had this kind of thing fascinated you ever since you were a kid?
When I was a child, I think none of the stuff we have today existed. I got my degrees in the 80s and 90s, and back then computer science was, internet, was you could count it on your fingers. Only universities had been connected at the time. I believe the first virus was created mid to late 80s.
Wow.
But back then, none of the stuff existed back then.
Yeah, so you've watched all this technology just completely develop over the years. Has it been? It's got to be fun for you to see how this stuff has changed and progressed as the years have gone by.
One of the greatest challenges we have in computer science is keeping up with technology, especially with security. It is absolutely a moving target. Every time we teach an ethical hacking or a cyberspace security, we have to update the course almost every quarter, just in order to be current with what the market is needing and what's the threat, the current or existing threat at the time.
Have you ever been able to speak, you know, like with maybe a former hacker? Have you ever talked to these guys and how they jump on top of this technology so quickly?
Some people, they were born to be hackers. A great friend of mine is Kevin Mitnick. He is one of the greatest hackers of our time. It's sort of Catch Me If You Can, if you saw that movie.
Yeah.
The FBI chased this guy for years. And then eventually he ended up getting tired of the FBI chasing him around. So he went in and he gave up himself. One of the best things is that the story that he told the FBI, put two FBI agents in front of his house to monitor him. Eventually, he ended up hacking into the FBI's phone. long story short, he became cooperative with the FBI, and now he's working with the FBI.
That's interesting. A lot of the hackers end up doing that. They end up, you know, after being hackers they end up going to the other side and helping people out with their knowledge.
Well, I guess the government became sort of a bit smart from that perspective. You either take them and put them into jail, and you have to watch them. And in the case of Kevin Mitnick, he ended up hacking through the phones of the state police. So they said, well, we're not going to keep watching this guy. We as well just deploy him and have him work for us. And people like that. The hackers who get the attention of the government, they like being part of the government. And there's so many happy stories that you could tell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this cyber hacking has gotten, you know, as you mentioned, you know, you have to update these things these things quarterly. It's moving faster. I mean, how do we keep up with these guys, with the hackers?
Well, the world today is jumping on the wagon of hackers. If you think of countries like United States, Russia, China, Canada, they invest heavily in cyberspace security. So can you to them? It is really difficult to say, and nor you want to advertise. That's something we don't do in security. We don't challenge hackers. So what we do is, we try to do our part in securing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep up? And it really depends. Are you talking about an ordinary person, home usage, or a company? It really depends on which one you want to tackle in this talk.
Okay.
You want to talk about
First of all, let's talk about it on the big end, with companies and with the government and stuff like that, because there's a story here that the New York Capitol got hit by a ransomware attack, taking services offline. This is a brand new story that ran yesterday. And I mean, that's pretty scary when Albany's government, you know, was hit by a ransomware attack. So how, on that kind of level, and then I want to get to the personal stuff so that our listeners, you know what they can do to protect themselves. But how does something like that, first of all, how does something like that happen to the capital of New York?
Well, it's not just the capital of New York. There are quite few organizations, and without naming them, they got fall into on these attacks. There was a, just to simplify the talk, there was a city hall here somewhere, not Chicago, a small city hall in the suburbs of Illinois, got hacked, where the hacker encrypted all the files on their machines, and he requested a Bitcoin in order to give them the sort of the encryption key.
Uh-huh.
They paid him the first time, and when they paid him the first time, he got greedy, and he asked for another Bitcoin, and they said no. Eventually, they end up losing all their data to that particular hacker.
Wow.
How do people... don't be afraid of the people who go out and advertise of how they get hacked. The problem is there's so many organizations, they get hacked, they get compromised, and we are unaware of.
Yeah.
How they get in? Literally, there are hundreds of doors for hackers to get in.
Mm.
Think about it for a second. If you have a machine, you have an operating system, and you have hundreds of applications running on these machines, and you have hundreds of services running in the background, each one of these applications or service can be a door to a hacker to come in.
Yeah, it's that's so it's got to be. I mean, it's got to be hard to keep up with that. And how, you know, on a big level, what do companies do to try and close these over 100 doors and keep these guys out?
Well, believe it or not, when we teach hacking, at the end, the conclusion is 80% of the company's budget goes towards educating their users and their employees, because people are the weakest link in the changes in the chain of security. They begin by, and there are a lot of common points between big companies and individual users. The first one is the simple old password that everybody is aware of. You know, when you say secure your password, people say, well, yeah, I am aware of it. My password is secure. The problem is, on an average person today, we hold anywhere between 10 and 20 different passwords between your social media, from Facebook to Twitter to Instagram to your financial institutions, to your emails, whether it's work or business, to your work emails, to your school if you go to school. So how do you keep all these passwords? You have to figure out the password. Well, the basic rule simply says you never use one password for more than one account. So you have to have a password for each individual account. Your password has to be strong enough. So someone comes and says, well, how do you expect me to remember 20 passwords? Some people, they use the same password for everything. And that's a problem, because if one application get compromised, then all your applications get compromised.
Right.
Think of the Facebook, the latest news about Facebook. They were storing people's passwords in a simple plain text.
Right.
So if you are one of those who lost that password, and you are one of those people who uses this password for every application, then all your work has been compromised. So now, if it is other people who says, okay, I'm going to have a password for every account that I have, then they write it down and they put a piece of paper and they put it on their computer, or they put it in a file on their machine, brings the same problem back, right?
Yeah.
So that if your computer gets compromised, then they lose all the passwords.
Yeah.
So the best way to do a password, it has to be a phrase. People have to learn how to generate a phrase that has lower cases, upper cases, long passwords, and the phrase has to do with that specific application. So if I'm working for WGN Radio Chicago, then I'll create a password that has WGN Radio .2020, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to learn that. And companies, they enforce that. A lot of companies, they enforce that you can use the same password for more than 30 days. They force you to change it every now and then.
Right. Listen, doctor, could you hang on a second? We have to take a break.
Sure.
Okay, hold on a second. We're learning a lot here from Dr. Faisal Akawi. He is the Master of Science in Information Systems Program, the director of that, and it's at Northwestern School of Professional Studies. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the tech stories and the cybersecurity stories that are happening in the news, and then and you'll learn more about what you can do to stay ahead of this and stay safe in online. Okay, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're doing some tech stuff tonight. We're going to be talking about how tech companies got their names. And then we're going to be talking about inventions, some of the best inventions of the past 65 years, and women who changed life as we know it, who made some of the most biggest inventions. And Apple has actually had some flops. I don't know if you believe that or not, but we'll get into that, too, this morning. It's also Wildcard Wednesday, so get your requests in now. It's any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You know, cyber attacks happen every day, and some big level, some small level, but there are ways that you can learn about it and ways that you can, you know, can protect yourself. Dr. Faisal Akawi is with us. He is a faculty director of the Master of Science in Information Systems program at Northwestern School of Professional Studies, and he's given us some news about some things that are happening in the world of cyber. Doctor, welcome back.
Thanks, sir. I'm still here.
All right. So let me ask you this: the you know what the common what are the most common attacks that, you know, like regular people get, you know, the average person might get?
A phishing attack. People think that the hackers are people are sitting behind a machine and they are targeting them personally. Phishing attack, a person can sit on a machine and generate 200 random emails that goes out to everybody. And believe it or not, we are in yet probably one of the most vulnerable nations on earth to phishing attacks. People need to understand that there is no organization, whether it's financial or others, or the government will ask you, will send you an email requesting that you go follow this link and change your password or update your password. People fall victims to these attacks. They send them links within an email. I would never open an email or a link within an email that I was not expecting it from a specific person. Almost 100% of the time, these links, as soon as you don't have to click on them, just by putting the mouse, we call it a mouse hover over, just by putting your mouse over that link, it will automatically download a virus or a spyware.
Is that right? Even without clicking on it? Really?
Without clicking on it. There are websites, just by visiting them, it will automatically download onto your machine. For that reason, we always advise people to have two users account when they log into their machine. If you have a machine at home and you log in and you only have one user account, that user account has an administrative right over that machine. So if you make a mistake, if you click on something or you download something or even visit a site that's infected, your system will automatically get infected. By you having a guest user account, and I do have that in my machine, when I do my daily work, I log in as a guest user. And then you could limit what that guest user can and cannot do. It could easily set up in your Windows or Mac. And if you don't know how, it's a simple Google of how to set up multiple users and how to assign rights to a user. So when I log in as a guest on my own machine, if I make a mistake and I download something, it will not even install. And that's the best way to protect. Remember, security is you are as secure as the weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
The best example I could give you is the Target hack. Target got hacked about a year or two ago.
Right.
It cost them almost $1 billion. The problem did not even come from the Target network. It is the people who operate the heating and the cooling system. They got compromised, and from that account got into the network of Target, and they uploaded or took all the data, all the credit cards.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter if your system is secure and you have a weak link. It doesn't matter if your system is secure and your son downloading or your daughter downloading a free movie on another machine on the same network. They need to be, for example, my house, I have all my kids under specific users. They could browse, they could download, they could do whatever they want, but they are not allowed to install. So you could download a virus, but you must, the virus, for it to do the damage, it must get installed. So if you are creating that user and limited in use, you limit the amount of damage. And these spyware are extremely dangerous. They sit on your machine. Every keystroke that you put on your computer, your password, your login, it's stored and gets uploaded somewhere into the cloud. It reports back to the hackers. And that's one way to protect yourself against such an attack.
That's some scary stuff. I want to close here with tell me all about the Northwestern Cybersecurity Boot Camp if people are interested in cybersecurity to learn about that. It starts April 23rd here in Chicago.
Yes, it is. Northwestern School Professional Study has quite few courses, boot camps, and even you could obtain a master's degree in information system with cyberspace security in it. So it depends on different what people really want. Are you looking for a course just to educate yourself and become aware of what you have on a personal use? We have that. If you have a boot camp, if you are looking to for a career in a in security, we have this boot camp that takes you from zero to as high as you can in security without any background. It's designed for non-technical, non-IT people as well as IT people. And if you are one of those who are looking for an entire master's degree, whether it's in artificial intelligence or data science or cyberspace security or ethical hacking, Northwestern School Professional Study have what you're looking for.
And so the boot camp is it begins on the classes begin on April 23rd. It's Tuesday and Thursday, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. If people are interested, how can they get started?
They could if they go to sps.northwestern.edu, they have the entire information there. They register, and then the admission office will reach out to them, and they connect them with the faculty and the classroom and the logistics of that specific boot camp.
And I think this would be helpful to a lot of people. Do you have do a lot of students come in who are just want to learn the basics so they can just take care of themselves and be safe in this environment?
Nick, our students they are split. 50% of them they are looking for a career change, no longer interested in doing what they are doing. In our programs, since we are professional and continuing education, you see the CIOs, the CEOs, the CFOs, the managers, the directors. There are high-end titles who come into the program. This is an adult. The average age is anywhere between 30 and 35 years old. Now, the other 50% is they're not interested in career change. They just want to do, they want computer science or information system to help them do whatever they do better. So they come in and they obtain the master's degree or the boot camp or a specific courses. You know, technology in every aspect of our life today, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you're a salesman or a marketing department or whatever. You need technology to be part of it. Other people, they just come in and they just want to secure themselves. They just want to enhance their knowledge of security. So, again, it fits whether you are a person who's looking to secure your network at home and dealing with your kids and your family and how to live in the age of technology, or someone looking to find a job in information system and security, or someone who wants to obtain an entire degree from Northwestern School of Professional Studies.
And how long has these programs been around, Doctor?
The information system has been around since 2001,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of these certificates are also there. It's not just the boot camp. You could obtain a certificate in data science or in artificial intelligence or in security or in project management. So this program is designed for working people. We know that most, if not all, of our students, they have a job, they have a family, and these programs are designed to fit their needs. A lot of these courses can also be taken online. You don't have to be on campus. Or if you are one of those traditional people who like to have the regular traditional class from 6 to 9 p.m. on a Monday night, mm-hmm. we have that too. So it is custom to the working person in corporate America.
That's great. That's really, really great. And again, I got the number here. If people are looking for information, you can call 312-416-9979. That's 312-416-9979. Doctor, I can't thank you enough for all the information that you gave us. Very helpful stuff. And I hope people sign up for the boot camp and sign up for the other classes as well.
My pleasure, Nick. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, take care. There you go. Gotta stay safe in this cyber world that we live in, man. So they got a Northwestern School of Professional Studies offers a cybersecurity boot camp. Classes begin April 23rd. And if you want to use this on a professional level, on a personal level, it's all out there for you. 312-416-9979 is the phone number. Okay, my thanks to Dr. Akawi. We're going to take a quick break. We got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Bad sound, blue moon in your eye, and you woke up the smell of all that love and gun. Your papa never told you. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. Somebody wanted to hear the Sopranos theme?
That they did. That's Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin. We get a lot of TV themes here on Wild Card Wednesday, so we're starting off Wild Card Wednesday with a classic TV theme right there from The Sopranos. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And, Wild Card Wednesday is underway. And it's any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. All right. So we were doing a little tech talk. We're going to continue some tech talk here. And I always find it really interesting on how certain things get their names or what's the story behind them. And I hear some stories about how tech companies, some tech sites and tech gadgets got their names. And if you want to jump in here with any of the, if you guys know how certain things got named and you want to share those stories or thoughts or any of that kind of stuff, you can text or call 312-981-7200. Okay. Skype. I often wondered how Skype got its name. We all know what Skype is. The idea of a video phone has been around for decades. But for years, the technology was never widely available for the average Joe. You know that Blade Runner takes place in 2019.
Yep.
And did you remember the fantastic video phones that they had on in that movie?
Yeah, wish I had one.
Yeah, well, they were all beat up and stuff because you know the future is always looks bad. But I remember when he's in the bar and he uses the phone. There's like graffiti all over the screen, everything. And I remember when I saw that movie back in 1982 when it came out, and I saw it in the theaters. I was like, man, that's the coolest thing ever—a video phone. And now,
yeah,
it's common.
It's kind of like how Star Trek invented the flip phone to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's true. What is it called in Star Trek? Why am I forgetting? What's it, his thing called?
Oh, God, I'm blanking. And I know all the Star Trek fans will kill me.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get an answer to it immediately because I'm not a big Star Trek guy. It's not a
transponder, no.
No.
Communicator? No.
No, I can't remember what it's called. What's it called, people? You know what it is.
Text it.
And text it or call us at 312-981-7200. That thing that Shatner has, the flip phone thing. Roger Badish, right?
Yeah, of course.
He's a Star Trek geek. And he's got one of those things, whatever they're called, that makes the noise.
Yeah, it's just called a communicator.
It's just called a communicator?
Yeah.
It is?
Yep.
Oh. Okay, I thought it had a different name. Speaking of names of things, just a communicator.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Roger has one of those things, and it makes the same sounds. It makes sounds that they're taken directly from the original Star Trek sound thing. And on Halloween, he's got a Federation uniform. And then he walks around the newsroom with a Federation uniform on with the communicator or whatever the hell it is. So
that's dedication.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he doesn't do it on he does it on Halloween. It's not like he does it like in the middle of May or something. He'll walk in and go, oh, I'm here for work, and he's dressed like
I kind of wish he would.
William Shatner. Well, I don't put it past Roger to do that. Don't put it past Roger to do anything. So. But yeah, they could have invented the flip phone. But yeah, it was always in those futuristic movies, man. The video phone. Oh, man, that was always part of the futuristic movies. So now we got Skype, and here's where we get the name from. The idea of video phones has been around for decades, but for years the technology was never widely available for the average Joe. Then a company with a strange name harnessed the power of the internet and the ever-growing ubiquity of webcams to bring that dream to the masses. But what does the name Skype, and of course people know that it's spelled S-K-Y-P-E, have to do with talking to other people online? Skype is a peer-to-peer communication technology, meaning one person connects to another person via the Skype service. Of course, to the average person, the connection is happening in a mysterious, ethereal realm. It is? Really? So when they were developing the name, they hit upon a rather descriptive Sky peer-to-peer, which was then shortened to Skyper. However, when they went to register the web address for their new product, Skyper.com was already taken. So they decided to try dropping the R, and sure enough, Skype.com was available. What is Skyper? Go look up Skyper.com. S-K-Y-P-E-R.
Skyper, I just met her.
Hello. What's going on? Did you eat a Henny Youngman sandwich before you came in this morning? What's going on?
Yeah, it came with an extra pickle.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, so what is Skyper? Do we know? Because it was already taken when Skype...
Yeah, we're looking into it right now.
Okay.
Who knows? It it reroutes to some German website. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's all in German.
Okay. Well,
I typed in Skyper.com, and that's what all popped that came up. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's how Skype was available. See, that's a fun story though. Let's drop the R. That's what the thought process was. It was Sky peer to peer was the original idea. But then we're like, yeah, we like Skyper, and then let's just drop the R so we can get the website. And now everybody knows it. BlackBerry, which I always thought was a weird name.
It's named after a fruit.
Yeah. Would President Obama have fought so hard to keep his Leapfrog phone? Oh, is that what it was originally called? Because the phone was leaps and bounds over everything else on the market. God, can you imagine, man, just thinking that the BlackBerry was like leaps and bounds at where we are right now? Does anybody still have a BlackBerry? Anybody like in your drawer somewhere?
I know that was like the standard business phone like mega years.
All the hotshot business people carried BlackBerries. Everybody was always on their BlackBerry. One of the names considered for BlackBerry was in fact Leapfrog. Another possibility was Strawberry because the tiny keys resembled seeds. Oh, so it looked like a strawberry.
Yeah, yeah.
But when someone felt the word straw sounded too slow, another berry was suggested. For anyone addicted to their BlackBerry, the origins of the nickname Crackberry would need no exception. More possible names were mentioned in a 2011 article in the New Yorker, which would have been Easy Mail, Mega Mail, and Pro Mail. But they chose BlackBerry. Hmm. So they had Leapfrog, Easy Mail, Mega Mail, Pro Mail. So
that would have been weird to name it just after like the mail function.
The what?
You said Pro Mail?
Oh, mail. Yeah, Pro Mail.
That make you think that just does email.
That's all it does, yeah. Mega Mail. Yeah, BlackBerry. I never had one. Well, I mean, I've told you this before. I didn't get a cell phone until 2007, and I had a flip phone until 2015. So, this...
BlackBerries were just...
No. I was just mad when I finally had to get the smartphone that I got in 2015. I used to love... I had a flip phone that you turned sideways and you'd flip it. I actually went through two flip phones. I had one flip phone in 2007, and then in 2009, I got a better flip phone, but it still wasn't a smartphone. It was just a, you know. I used to love the tactile buttons when I texted. I like pressing down on the buttons. And so when I got the smartphone, where everybody has it now, where you type on the screen and there's no, I like the sound that you have when you got your smartphone and you're sending a text and it's going, so it sounds like you're pressing a button, even though you're not. I like that they added that to give me some sort of comfort. But I remember when I first got a phone. I mean, I had that phone for over 6 years, the flip phone with the clickety clicks. And I was so upset when I because it died. The phone was, I mean, you know, these phones are not supposed to, you're supposed to get a new phone every 2 years. So, I was upset when I had to get this. And because I don't like change in the first place. I just don't like change. I hate when things change. I hate it. So then I had to move up to the smartphone. And I like the phone I have now. I got another, I got a phone, a few months ago. A new phone a few months ago, and I finally got used to it.
Well, now
I still have my other phone at home,
and yours doesn't even have any buttons on it except for maybe on the side, right? Or does it have a little home button?
It's got two buttons. It's got three buttons on one side and one button on the other side.
Yeah, I've still got an iPhone that has a little home button for the thumbprint, and I'm really afraid to upgrade because you don't get that on the iPhone X.
I get the
it's just the face.
This is an LG phone.
Okay,
and I've always been an Android guy. I've always all the way back to 2015. I've got the fingerprint thing here on this. It's like right underneath the lens of the camera.
Yeah.
And it's a nice phone.
Yeah. No, they are very nice.
It's a nice phone. So, And, you know, it was so funny because, you know, going from the flip phone to the clickety-clickety, from the clickety-clickety to the Samsung that I had, the Galaxy 6S was the phone that I had. I still have it at home. I use it every once in a while. It still works. I just said I had major issues with charging the phone, like it wouldn't charge. And then I brought it across. I live not too far from a Verizon office. I brought it over there. The used car salesmen that now sell cell phones, because that's what they are now. Used car salesmen are no longer the epitome of you're going to walk out of here with a product and I'm going to give you the hard sell. That now belongs to the guys who work at cell phone stores. Because these guys were like, I mean, they were full on hard sale going at it, trying to get me to walk with a phone. And I did. I walked with a phone. And so, you know, the dude got his commission, and I'm sure he was really thrilled about that. But these guys are ruthless now, man. I was like, all right, just give me the phone. Shut your mouth. I don't want to hear any more of this. You know, transfer all of my contacts, transfer all of my pictures, transfer all of that stuff into the new phone. Let me keep the old phone, and I want out of here. And there you go.
Will sell you any plan, any accessory.
Oh, yeah. The guy was like, he was trying to sell me a $50 cover for the phone. And I'm like, no, I don't want a $50 cover for the phone. Mm. It was ridiculous. And every guy in there was like that. They had like the suits. They had the you know what I mean? It was literally felt like I was buying a used car.
They smell blood in the water.
Oh, that's it. As soon as I walked in, they were all over me. You know? And they were trying to sell me like some ridiculous phone that like cost $9 million, and I'm like, "No. You see this phone that I'm bringing in? I want a phone similar to this." And he's like, "Okay." And so it's an upgrade from that. Well, cause, you know, I mean the phone that sure. I had was 5 years old, almost 4 years old, so. Mm-hmm. But anyway. So yeah, I'm not really a big tech guy, so never had a BlackBerry. Never had a BlackBerry, although I'm sure I would have liked the clickety clickities because it did have the buttons. So, all right, let's take a break. We have more stories about how these tech companies, these websites, and these gadgets got their names. Skyper. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us for talk or text. The Braves are coming off a surprise division title, but Baez and the boys are looking to make a run of their own. Cubs Braves tonight at 6 on WGN TV.
Folks call it the birth of Bud Boogie.
Yeah. the birth of Bud Boogie. Jimmy Castor. Who requested that?
That was coming to us from the 309.
309 area code. Birth of Bud Boogie with Jimmy Castor. You know,
that's incredible.
When the call, you should go back and look at some of the other stuff that he wrote. Gotta find a woman. Gotta find a woman. It's Jimmy Castor was the man. So we had at Simon's, when I used to hang out at Simon's in Andersonville, they had the best of Jimmy Castor on the jukebox. Because of course it's Simon's and they have like, they still have CDs. They don't have a computer jukebox. They still program the jukebox to be one of the weirdest and most eclectic in the city, and that's basically what it is. It's always been considered one of the best jukeboxes in the city for, you know, in bars. So we used to hang out. I used to hang out there. I was there every night, basically. And so they used to have the best of the Jimmy Castor bunch on there. And so we would play that. And then it became, when the Cubs were making their run in 2007 and 2008, that became that bump, bump, ba-ba-dum, ba-dum, bump, bump, ba-ba-dum. We would do that at the bar whenever the Cubs, like, got a hit or a home run or scored a run or something or did something great. Like, 10 of us would be at the bar going, bump, bump, ba-ba-dum. And then, like, during a rally, somebody would go to the jukebox and play the Birth of Butt Boogie. And it became, like, the theme for that for the season. I think it was 2007. Either it was 2007 or 2008. I can't remember which year. 2008. Might have been 2008, because 2008, up until 2016, 2008, in my lifetime, not my lifetime, because I was born in 65 and 69 was there too, I was four, but in my adult lifetime or in my, you know, conscious lifetime, until 2016 and 2015, the 2008 team was the best, was, in my opinion, the best team that ever took the field for the Cubs. In that time, I mean, they were unbelievable. Yeah. And the fact that they got swept again by the damn Dodgers, I I was so livid. Anyway, so that became like the theme. Like we'd boom, boom, ba-ba-dum. Everybody in the bar. There's no explanation for it. It just started because like the Jimmy Castor CD got on the jukebox and all of his songs are ridiculous. So it became like our theme. And so because of this phenomenon, we got Jimmy Castor on my show. I wanted to interview him and also tell him that the Bertha Butt Boogie became, at least in one bar in Chicago, it became the Chicago Cubs theme song for a rally. So Cubs had a rally, boom, boom, ba-ba-dum. And everybody started doing it in the bar. It became like a thing. And he was fantastic. Sounded exactly like, how you doing, Nick? He was doing the, he's like, and it was a great interview. And I love that song. I love Jimmy Castor. Why am I blanking on the name of the Neanderthal man song that he wrote? You can look it up. If you Google Jimmy Castor, Gotta Find a Woman, you'll get the name of the song because it's about a caveman.
Is it Troglodyte?
Troglodyte. That's it. You know what? Pull that up. Pull that up and play a little bit of it because it's a good guy. Gotta find a woman. Gotta find a woman. Yeah, Troglodyte.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's just, you know, this was late 60s, early 70s, you know, when he had these songs. And when I was a kid, I just thought it was the greatest music I ever heard in my life. And the Bertha Butt Boogie. And, I mean, there were so many of them. He told all these crazy stories through his, you know. Yeah, now this goes on for a while. He's telling a story right now. keep going. Play it.
When he got tired of dancing alone,
yeah.
He'd look in the mirror and say, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman. He'd go down to the lake where all the girls would be swimming or washing clothes or something. He'd look around and just reach in and grab one.
Yeah.
Come here.
Yeah. Troglodyte. The late, great Jimmy Castor. Thank the 308 area or 309 area code for Jimmy Castor on Wildcard Wednesday. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, you ever wonder about how Reddit got its name? REDDIT. People know that website. We use it pretty often.
Yeah,
here as a resource on the show. Well, we're talking about how tech companies and sites and gadgets got their names. Reddit, which allows members to submit links to online content, which is then voted up or down to decide which submissions are most worthy of being read by everyone else, was started in 2004 by then college students Steve Huffman and Alexis Ohanian. The name Reddit is little more than a play on the phrase read it, as in I read it online, quote unquote. But as one member of the site, also known as a Redditor, see, get it, editor, Redditor. REDDITOR, pointed out, there is a Latin parallel to the site's name that turned out to be a pretty cool coincidence. One loose translation of Reddit is render, which can mean to submit for consideration or approval, which is exactly what people do on the site. Well, there you go. That turned out to be a happy coincidence. Yeah. Yeah, I think Reddit's kind of fun to look at. You know, Redditor. Wasn't aware that they got their own terminology. So, all right. All right, we're going to find out about some more tech companies and tech sites, tech gadgets, and how they got their name, the stories behind that. Because, you know, right now you could have been playing on your Leapfrog back in the early 2000s. You could have been playing on your Leapfrog while you were waiting to talk to someone on Skyper. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Any artist, any song, anything. If you've got any stories behind things that have been named, share them with us, either by texting them or calling us. And that's 312-981-7200. Okay, the news is coming up right after this, and then we'll get back to how these things got their names right here on 720 WGN.
Soon the pines will be falling everywhere. Village children fight each other. chair. And the 609 goes roaring past the creek.
Deacon Lee. A little Elton John here in the morning. Wild Card Wednesday. You be a Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who requested the Elton John?
That was Paul. Give me a little Elton John.
There you go, Paul. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We were talking tech a little bit earlier and cybersecurity and stuff, and we're continuing to talk tech stuff. We will also be talking about the fact that Apple has actually had some failures. We'll get into that. But we're talking about how tech companies, sites, and gadgets got their names. And we mentioned BlackBerry, and someone in the 847 area code said, last year I sold an executive version BlackBerry on eBay for $150. It was in a 10-inch by 10-inch black textured box. The executive edition was given to CEOs to give them a try before they were available to the public. It contained a BlackBerry phone, of course, charger cord, special charging dock, leather passport cover, and a corded small speaker. $150 on eBay, he sold it for. Speaking of eBay, did you order your Mark of the Devil puke bag?
No, but I ordered the Blu-ray.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna watch it, and then I'm gonna get the barf bag.
Well, you know, it's by today's standards, it's nothing, man. It's this notorious movie where they were giving out barf bags for people who didn't listen. There was this movie that came out in the early 70s called Mark of the Devil. My dad bribed a manager at a movie theater in order for me to get in. And the movie's big promotion was that if you saw the movie, if you got in, you got a barf bag that had the Mark of the Devil poster on it. And I remember seeing it. It was lots of torture, lots of gore and stuff in it. But by today's standards, especially in terms of like special effects and stuff like that, yeah, you're probably going to laugh. That would be my guess. But Reggie Nodler's in the movie.
Okay.
He played the main bald freaky vampire in Salem's Lot.
Oh, nice.
That guy.
That guy did freak me out.
Yeah, and he's in Mark of the Devil. So, now, we just had a person tell us about how they sold their BlackBerry on eBay. Where did eBay get their name? Whether you're cleaning out the attic or looking for a deal on your next must-have gadget, there's a good chance you're going to wander over to eBay. But where did this powerhouse of e-commerce come from, and what does the name mean anyway? Oddly enough, there's actually a legend surrounding the founding of eBay. For a while, it was widely believed that in 1995, then 28-year-old software developer Pierre Omidyar created a website called Auction Web just so that his fiancée could buy and sell collectible Pez dispensers. It does make for a good story, but the Pez part isn't true. You know what? I dated a girl who had a massive collection of Pez dispensers. Like, insane. Like, she had a case for them.
Oh, God.
She was, like, hardcore into the Pez dispenser thing.
How do people even get started on that?
Just
really like Pez?
Yeah, she liked Pez, but it was something about the she liked the weird dispensers. I'll tell you what, she did have one that was pretty awesome. That was really, really awesome. It was an alien. It was an alien Pez dispenser, and when you lifted up the neck, the teeth came out and had the Pez in the jaws where the teeth came out. The only problem was there was no slime dripping from them as it
came. Well, yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty cool, though. That was the one that I was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, get creative.
Yeah. But anyway, the Pez part isn't true. Omidyar was simply looking for a way to make something interesting online that would bring, quote, together buyers and sellers in an honest and open marketplace, unquote. What's not legend, though, is that the first item sold on eBay was anything but glamorous. It was a broken laser pointer. What?
What a magnanimous start.
A broken laser pointer? Couldn't even play with your cats with that. Omidyar only intended the laser pointer listing to be a test, but was surprised to find that someone actually bought it. According to legend, someone who collected broken laser pointers. What am I missing? What's going on here? Have I walked into Jordan Peele here? Are we in the Twilight Zone? Thinking he might be onto something. Yeah, I think so. Because if you can actually get someone to buy a broken laser pointer, you might be onto something. Omidar started working in earnest on the program. While contemplating names for the site, he initially planned to use the name of his computer consulting company, which was Echo Bay.
Oh.
However, EchoBay.com was already taken.
Again.
You would look up Echo Bay, and it says, and still is. So this one I don't think is going to reroute to a German website. I think this is actually going to be whatever EchoBay.com is.
Yeah, Echo Bay Partners Private Equity.
Oh, it's a private equity. Okay.
Yep.
Omidar shortened the name to eBay and bought the web address we know and love. So again, just call it eBay. Let's get the website. Same thing. Skyper, just drop the R. Broken laser pointer. I don't understand that at all. According to legend, someone who bought it, who collected broken laser pointers. I thought the girl that I dated who collected the Pez dispensers was weird. There's somebody out there who collects specifically broken laser pointers. Hey, I got a laser pointer. Does it work? Yeah, not interested. Break it, and then maybe I'll buy. Maybe I'll buy it. Boy, I used to have a field day with my cats and those laser pointers, man. You know, obviously cats climb up the walls. Sure. They go nuts.
They love it.
I had one cat that was really stupid. His name was Jackass. And the other cat that we had at the same time was named Bangs. He was named after...
Lester Bangs?
Yes. And so Lester, or I should say Bangs, we called him Bangs. Bangs was the smart one. Okay. And Jackass earned his name. Like I knew I wanted to name. We got two cats. I knew I wanted to name one of them after Lester Bangs because he's one of my heroes. And Bangs is a cool name for a cat, I think.
Totally.
But we couldn't think of a name for the other one. We were going to save it. But then, like after one night of watching this kitten and his behavior, we were like, this cat's a jackass. So we called him Jackass, and we would play. It was my girlfriend and I at the time. We lived together, and we would play with the laser pointer. We had a laser pointer that actually worked, so the person out there would be very disappointed in a working laser pointer. Why doesn't this guy just get laser pointers and break them? You know what I mean? Get working laser pointers.
I wonder if it's part of the modus operandi,
yeah.
Where it has to already
it
be broken.
It has to already be broken, and then he'll set up his own backstory on how the laser pointer got broken. So anyway, we would play, and so we would do the whole, you know, laser, and they would both chase after the dot, as most cats do. But we would do this thing where we would, there was a little gap underneath the hallway closet door, just a little teeny, like, you know, a half inch gap, maybe a little less than that, between the floor and the bottom of the door. And so we would make it look like the dot went under the door. So we would turn it off so it looked like it went under, you know, of the door into the closet. And so Jackass would go under the door, and then he would sit by the door, and he would reach under and then just, like, sit there. Bangs did not fall for it at all. When it went under the door, he went, yeah, it's not under the door. And he'd walk away. That was the difference. That was the basic difference between the two cats.
Was the concept of object permanence.
One of the cats actually figured, no, it's not under the door. You know, and I'm not going to sit here. But the other cat would sit there and just wait for it to come from under the door. And then we would do it so it looked like it came from under the door. And we would do it again, boom, 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 and make it go under the door again into the closet. And again, it didn't fool Bangs, even though it came out from underneath the door. We made it look like it came in out from inside the closet. He still didn't fall. He's like, yeah.
Good on you, Bangs. Good on you.
Yeah. So, broken laser pointers. That's the way to go. You know, that's a topic that we can get into. We haven't talked about this in a while. What weird collections people have. We've talked about this, you know, several times over the many years that I've been on the radio. We've talked about, like, weird collectibles. I've never heard of anything like broken laser point. I've never heard of that before.
That's just so specific.
So specific and so weird. All right.
It's just odd.
How did Kindle get its name? As e-readers became mainstream, the strangely named Kindle... K-I-N-D-L-E, as we all know, from Amazon led the charge. The device's moniker, which comes from the idea of kindling a fire, is not meant to be a dig at paper books. Instead, the company says the Kindle refers to an intellectual fire of new ideas that could spread to readers all over the world who now have quick and easy access to the vast digital library at Amazon. Come on, man. What PR department, what people over at Amazon came up with that?
That's like one of the most pretentious things I've
it's
ever
ridiculous.
Heard.
The Kindle refers to an intellectual fire of new ideas that could spread to readers all over the world who now have a quick and easy access to the vast library of digital library at Amazon.
Hmm.
You know, it's funny. When you read that statement, you actually have to put a monocle on. That's legally. You can't read that without a monocle. Well, that's ridiculous. All right, how about Woot? W-O-O-T. I've never used Woot. Have you used Woot?
I did back in my gaming days.
Now, what is it? Okay, since 2004, Woot has offered deals to devoted fans known as Wooters, who obsessively check Woot sites to buy everything from computers to flashlights to a bag of crap, which is called BOC, a coveted mystery grab bag that was often sold out within minutes of its unveiling. Amazon Prime members can now enjoy that benefit with free shipping thanks to the fact that Amazon now owns the brand. Oh, well, sure, of course. Of course they own the brand. They own everything. Bag of crap. It's really funny, that's what I say when I talk about how when you give stuff away on the radio, you know, like you say, "Hey man, you got to be you got to be calling number 9, man. Calling number 9 at 591 whatever." You know, that you call up and if you're calling number 9, you're going to get some, you get something free. People don't care what it is. They don't care what it is. Whenever we give stuff away on the air, they don't care what it is. If it's free, they will call in and they will want to win it. And I often say we could give away a bag of poo. Like if I could say, "Ninth caller gets a bag of poo," the phone lines would light up and the ninth caller would be unbelievably happy to get a bag of poo because they got it for free. I mean, it's just because people, they just don't care. When they, like people listen to the radio, they hear "free caller." Ah! They don't even hear what it is. They don't even know what it, they don't even know what they're dialing the phone for. They have no idea what they're going to win, nor do they care as long as it's free. You want a bag of poo? Outstanding. I've always wanted a bag of poo. But anytime, man, people just let their brains, I don't know what happens, but there's something happens to people when they're listening to the radio. And we got a giveaway, man. Calling number 8. Oh, my God. Get the phone, Harriet. We got to be calling number 8. I don't care what it is. And then he gets off the phone. "Harriet, I want a bag of poo." You idiot. I find that hilarious that they use bag of crap on Woot. I think that's pretty funny because that's always been the term I've used when I'm talking about how people just don't care what they win on the radio. Radio giveaways. They just don't care.
We literally did that on Dean's show once. We gave away, he just had a bunch of old stuff in his office.
Oh, yeah.
I think we gave away a box of Rizzos that were expired and stale.
Yeah, people don't care. I'm telling you.
Coffee mug. I think we even did stamps.
Did you do broken laser pointers? Because that would have been a big one with a very specific part of society. Woot. If you're familiar with the internet culture, you'll know that Woot is also an expression of excitement, which is spelled Woot with the two zeros instead of the O's.
Mm-hmm.
According to Matt Rutledge, the founder and former CEO of Woot.com, that was where the company got its name, but it goes deeper than that. Company Woot was designed from the ground up to fit the name and adapt itself to the public employee store type of liquidation retailer. The name Woot is named after Woot, which is the W002T, but where does that come from? That's actually a bit of a mystery. Some people believe it appeared in the mid-90s, adopted from the songs Woop There It Is and Woot There It Is. Others think it's an acronym of "We Owned the Other Team."
That's how I used it.
We Own the Other Team?
Yeah, because I would play the game Counter-Strike.
Okay.
In like the early 2000s, and you'd hit him with the Woot.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh. Wow. All right. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to give away a bag of poo. So get those dialing fingers ready. All right, we'll take a break here on WGN. I've heard this 8,000 times and I can't place it. Why can't I place it? Is it a TV show?
Yes, it is.
Oh man, I don't know.
Very important for Chicago, but also the entire country. But
why am I? What is it?
It's At the Movies.
Oh, At the Movies. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Brian from West Chicago wanted us to play that because today is the 6th anniversary of the passing of Roger Ebert.
Yeah, Rog.
What a guy.
He was an amazing guy. Amazing guy. I was lucky enough to get to know him and Gene.
Yeah. I've got every volume of his great movies books.
Yeah. No, he was an incredible guy. Very, very. Have you seen Life Itself?
Yeah, that was a tearjerker.
Oh man.
That's up there with Won't You Be My Neighbor in terms of documentaries of just truly great people.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hard to watch, you know, because I knew him.
Yeah,
I knew Roger.
I can't even imagine.
It was really, really. I mean, it's hard to watch as somebody who didn't know Roger. It was difficult to watch the amount of freedom that he gave Steve James in making that movie and documenting what happened, you know, to him is amazing. And Chaz is just, she's the best.
Oh, she's incredible.
Chaz is the best.
And I never watched Gene Siskel on TV. He had already died by the time I was old enough to watch At the Movie. Yeah. So it was.
He passed in 99.
Yeah. So I didn't come to At the Movies until it was Ebert and Roper.
Right, right. It was called Sneak Previews when it first came on, when it was on Channel 11 back in the 70s when they started. Mm-hmm. It was called Sneak Previews with Gene and Roger. So they were great guys, two great guys, hugely influential, not just, you know, to people who want to be film critics, but to film criticism in general. So mainstream, man. It was never mainstream. Being a film critic was never mainstream before. Nobody cared. But anyway. All right. So, hey, coming up at 6 o'clock is Steve Cochran, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Let's find out a couple more things here about how they got their names. Etsy. Founded in 2005, the online marketplace Etsy has amassed over 7 million registered users and saw revenues of just over $106.4 million in 2017. Good Lord. And while the name is catchy, many have often asked what it means. For a while, the company was tight-lipped about the origin, leaving users to come up with their own acronyms or explanations. However, January 2010, in an interview for Reader's Digest, co-founder Rob Kalin, finally gave fans a hint. I wanted a nonsense word because I wanted to build the brand from scratch. I was watching Fellini's 8.5 and writing down what I was hearing. In Italian, you say itzi, which means Etsy a lot, which means oh yes, and in Latin it means and if. Then in 2013, co-founder Chris McGuire shared another story behind Etsy's name, concluding that we then made a founder's pact to give a different origin story of the site's name every time someone asked about it. So we still don't know. Still a mystery. Let's see. Bing.
Google's weird cousin.
Do you know that you will get to know, you will know as my producer now, you will get to know Stephen Tobolowsky because he's a regular on the show. He's a regular guest on the show.
Amazing.
And he's one of the greatest character actors of all time, one of the funniest people on the planet, one of the greatest storytellers ever, one of the nicest guys ever. And you'll get to know him. You know that he, you know that like his catchphrase in, you know, Needle Nose Ned's catchphrase, Ned Ryerson's catchphrase, Bing!
Yep.
He lost the job to somebody else. He was initially the Bing voice.
I feel like it's someone
for
else
the commercials
too.
For the commercials. Bing! He's got a sad story about it. I brought it up. I brought it up. He was kind enough to join me via Skype after I hosted a screening of Groundhog Day at my film club a couple of years ago. And it was fantastic. He was on the screens, on the big screen, and we were Skyping, and people were asking him questions, and he was supposed to do, we said, maybe we'll do 20 minutes. We don't want to keep him. He did 45, 50 minutes, because that's the kind of guy that he is. And I was like, hey, your catchphrase in this movie, this Bing, that became that search engine. He's like, yeah. And he told the story about, I can't remember the details of the story, but he lost out on a lot of dough because of And I was like, I'm really sorry I brought it up. When Microsoft was developing the name for their search engine, they wanted something with a single syllable, memorable and easy to spell. Of course, they got into the naming process. There were other things, like, for example, Bang, which was, no. That's a no. That's a big no, which was rejected because you couldn't make a verb out of it without sounding inappropriate.
You think?
Yeah. Bang! The marketers decided to put their money on Bing. Not only was it a single syllable, easy to spell and easy to remember, it also sounded like bingo, which is usually said when you found something that you're looking for. Oh, man, come on. The name also reminded people of the moment an idea is hatched, sort of like when a light bulb goes off over your head. You hear Bing. So, there. All right.
That's a tough look for Bang, though.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Too bad.
What are you kids doing in there? Banging.
Yeah. But Bing's detractors are quick to suggest that the name is is actually an acronym. Have you heard this?
No.
Bing is not Google. That's pretty funny. I got to admit, that's pretty funny. Bing is not Google.
No, it is not.
Oh, it is not. Hold on, let's see. 870 area code. We were talking about my cats. My cat, one of my cat's names was Jackass. My cat's name is Pima, P-I-M-A, which means pain in my ass. We love him anyway, though. 815 area code says, wait, it matters whose poop it is? Oh, I don't know. It's, well, yeah, we can, well, this is just poop we found and we put it in a bag. That's what it is. It's unspecified poop, unspecified poo that we put in the bag of poo. So that's what you'll win if you're caller number 9. Yeah, man, caller number 9! I was telling you off the air, Tom, that when I was younger, when I was a kid, I won so much stuff off the radio. All classic rock FM, you know, or pop stations. They'd give away albums or T-shirts or whatever, caller number whatever, 12, I would always be ready to go. I knew pretty much exactly what time they were going to do, you know, their contests each hour. That was a total geek. I was a dork. And, yeah.
And they didn't stop you? Like, no, you won something last week?
Well, you know what? Back in those days, they didn't have the stringent rules that they have now. I mean, I think I won like every week sometimes. So, all right, we got a break. When we'll come back, we're going to wrap up the talk about where the gadgets and the companies and the sites got their names. And we also are going to talk about the actual flops that Apple has had. They've actually had flops. So, tech stuff continues right here on 720 WGN. The news is coming up after this. Sugar. Oh, honey, honey. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. The Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday continues. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Archies?
That was our good friend, Canadian Bill.
Canadian Bill.
And here's the Canadian connection. It was co-written by Andy Kim, who was a Canadian who was in the band. He was featured on that recording.
Andy Kim, I didn't realize that Andy Kim was Canadian, but anytime, you know, and again, Vic, as you said, you never doubt Canadian Bill. He will.
We learned that, didn't we? Yep.
Yes, we did. Andy Kim, can you Google Andy Kim? Because he had a hit on his own.
Yeah, he had Baby I Love You.
Mm-hmm.
And he, just for Canadian Bill, he's from Montreal.
He's from Montreal.
Rock Me Gently.
Rock Me Gently.
There
that's it
is. It. Yeah.
Rock me gently, rock me slowly, take it easy, don't let go. Yeah.
Fantastic.
'Cause I ain't ever been loved like this before. Andy Kim.
You have a beautiful voice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's. I know we're on the 18th floor, but there are cats now outside the window of the newsroom.
Yeah. They miss Esmeralda singing.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. All right. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is a Wednesday morning, and it's Wild Card Wednesday, 312-981-7200. We are going to talk a little bit more tech stuff here. We're having some fun with the origins of where these sort of tech companies and websites and gadgets got their names. And speaking of tech companies, not everything that Apple touches turns to gold. So we've got some of their actual flops that we are talking about here. But let's get back to some of the origins of where these things got their names. Some of these stories are pretty funny. TiVo. T-I-V-O. Does anybody still say they TiVo'd it? Or it's don't people just say it's on my DVR?
I don't even say the words DVR anymore.
No?
No. I mean, TiVo was a game changer. That's how I watched all of Lost back in the day, I guess. But yeah, pretty much people have moved on to streaming.
Yeah, well, I'm not. I my DVR is loaded. I mean, I know I program my DVR all the time.
Do you think you'll ever cut the cord?
I don't think so.
Like Sling TV, even.
Mm-mm. I don't think so. No, I have a lot of shows that I regularly DVR. So, I remember when TiVo first hit, and not everybody had it, and only a few people had it. I had a partner, when I first started hosting shows, I had a partner named Gary Lee Wright, who they teamed me up with. And Gary and I were talking about, because I had my own show starting in May of 98. I started, doing my own show and co-hosting with Gary Lee Wright, and then eventually had my own show on Friday. We hosted Saturday overnights. Together, and then I started hosting Friday overnights a few months later, and then I got Sunday overnights as well. So I was there all weekend, and Gary and I were together on Saturday nights into Sunday mornings. And so TiVo was new when we got in the air, relatively new, and not a lot of people had it. So we were talking about TiVo, and if you have TiVo, why is it good? Why do you like it and all that stuff? And a guy called up. I'll never forget this. We laughed at this. We laughed like maniacs during the call, but we laughed like maniacs. Someone called in and said, TiVo's great. We got a bunch of calls from people who actually were right on the cutting edge of having TiVo. Cause at that time in like 98, like I said, DVRs and TiVo was not a regular thing in everybody's house the way it is now. So we're talking and people are calling in, and this one guy calls up and says, yeah, TiVo, is great. We love it. And we said, well, why do you love it so much? And he's like, you know, it's really cool. Cause you can freeze live TV. You can stop it. You can rewind and you can freeze it. You can stop it. You can rewind and you can freeze it. And it's really cool. And the example that he gave us was there's an infamous, episode. There's an infamous episode of Three's Company where John Ritter is in a pair of, you know, because that show took place in the 70s and the early 80s. He was in a pair of short shorts. There is this urban legend that you can see his penis hanging out of the bottom of his shorts at during certain angles. It's like this infamous sort of Three's Company episode. And so this guy's example of why TiVo is so great was because you could freeze it, and he's like, you could see John Ritter's thing. So we would freeze it and we could see John Ritter's thing. It's the best. TiVo's the best. And that was his reasoning, so that he could see John Ritter's thing. He could freeze frame it and look at John Ritter's thing. And Gary and I were on the floor. We were laughing so hard. We were like, seriously, that's the reason why you like TiVo so much? Is so that you can look at John Ritter's junk on a freeze frame?
The miracle of technology.
Yeah. Now, do you know the most TiVo'd moment?
No.
In television history? The most TiVo'd moment in television history, like rewound, TiVo'd, like when, you know, you TiVo it and rewind. Not program, but like during live broadcast, what was the most rewound and rewatched?
Can I take a shot in the dark?
Yeah, go ahead.
Was it Janet Jackson?
Yes.
Okay.
Wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl.
I remember seeing that happen live.
Yeah.
I was quite young.
Yeah.
What was that, 2004?
Yes. Yeah. Because it was the beginning. It was February of 2004.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That was rewound into, like, everybody across the nation suddenly. Brrr, everybody's TiVo is smoking. So here's Francis on WGN. Hi, Francis. Francis? I can't. Francis?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Sorry. Two things. One, TiVo. President Trump calls it TiVo.
He calls it TiVo?
He talks about TiVoing shows all the time. I think the quote is, it was like the greatest invention ever. You guys should try it. And this is within the last 3 months.
Ah. He just said that. He said it's the greatest. He just said that in the last 3 months.
You can look it up, but that's what I believe I remember hearing.
Wow. Okay. So he still calls it TiVo. All right.
Right. Yeah. So it should be trending.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, when you talked about people and calling in for free bags of food or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess I'm more empathetic because I believe that they just want to make contact. They just want to win something. It's not what it is. They just want to win for the day.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
Someone to talk to you and listen to them, like you're listening to me at 3:13 in the morning.
Right. Well,
so that's what I think it is.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Francis.
Sure.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, I still wouldn't call in for a free bag of poo. That would not be something that I would do. I'd hold off, man. It's like, yeah, bag of poo, man. So TiVo, can you imagine if instead of TiVoing the latest episode of Lost, you were bongoing it? Bongo and lasso are just two of the 800 possible names the marketing folks kicked around before settling on TiVo. 800 names? The final name was cobbled together from TV and the engineering acronym I.O., which stands for input-output. Little did they know that their noun would become a verb and that their oddly named invention would forever change the way people watched television. True. Very true. And it's funny how Google became a verb, too. You know?
I think that's, like, a common thing with most of the great inventions is that they become the name of the action.
Well, yeah. And also, like, some product names, like Kleenex,
mm-hmm.
become, instead of saying tissue, you say Kleenex, even though that's a brand name.
Or fridge.
Yeah, well,
isn't that supposed to be for Frigidaire?
It is. Well, there's a company Frigidaire, yeah.
Yeah.
But refrigerator is an actual word. But, I'm actually a Puffs guy. I do not have Kleenex at home. I have Puffs because Puffs has a version. First of all, I like the boxes better because they're smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, they have a version of Puffs where it's got like lotion. But it's Vicks. So if you're, like, stuffed up at all and you blow your nose, you can breathe in, you get a hit of Vicks. It's a fantastic product. It's a fantastic product, especially, you know, if you've got, like, a stuffed up nose. And
Yeah.
I've had a cold now for 4 months. And so, but yeah. How about Bluetooth? Despite the lack of dignity displayed by people who shout into their Bluetooth headsets wherever they go, the name of this device actually has a rather regal origin. In the 10th century, Danish King Harald Blattand was able to unite warring factions in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark under one banner. Similarly, the developers of the Bluetooth signal wanted to unite many forms of technology, cars, computers, and mobile phones under one communications network. So when they were coming up with a name, they went to the English translation of the Danish king's last name, and that would be Bluetooth.
Using technology pioneered by Hedy Lamarr. Seriously.
Yeah?
Yeah, because she was, we got a texter actually just sent this in. Glamorous movie star of the 30s and 40s, Hedy Lamarr also patented a frequency-shifting communications method to prevent the Germans from hacking U.S. torpedoes. So that technology got used in the creation of Bluetooth, in the creation of Wi-Fi, and a lot of cell phone technology.
Wow. Oh. All right. How about Hulu? Hulu, the famous streaming service that has the crowd-pleasing, hilarious Handmaid's Tale. that Patty Vasquez watched two full seasons of back-to-back because she's nuts. Hulu means many things to many people. To some, it's a great online resource for watching their favorite TV shows and movies. But to a native Hawaiian, it means hair. To someone who speaks Swahili, it means cease. Indonesian, it means butt, B-U-T-T. While these translations are accurate, the folks behind naming the brand were inspired by a couple of Mandarin Chinese definitions instead. Interactive recording and a hollowed-out gourd used to hold precious things. That's a Hulu. I don't know. So I guess your device is the gourd that holds the precious things?
I know when that debuted, I thought it was kind of a dumb name.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do I know?
How about Nintendo Wii? It's W-I-I. First of all, W-I-I is pronounced Wii, which emphasizes the social concept that Nintendo envisioned for the console. The name is also universal without any direct translation into any particular language, reinforcing that an all-inclusive idea and avoiding any Hulu-like situations. The company even liked the double I spelling because it looked like two people standing side by side. The name was not popular at first, but the concept obviously caught on because Americans have purchased over 20 million Wiis since its debut in 2006, making it one of the most successful video game systems ever. Mm. How many people whip their Wii device into the whip the remote and broke a TV?
That was an epidemic.
It was. People bowling and then the TV goes flying. The thing I liked about Wii, I've never had Pong. That's all I had when I was. I never got into video systems. I had friends who had the Atari back in the old days, but I don't have an Xbox. I don't have any of that stuff. But my friend had the Wii, and we went over to his house, my ex-wife and I, and we did the bowl. We enjoyed the bowling one the most. That was the one we liked.
Oh, yeah,
the most.
It was fun.
But the thing that I liked most about it was the avatars that you could create of yourself. Those, because you could make an avatar that looked exactly like, it looked like a really cool, crazy cartoon version of you. My favorite part was all the people who had made avatars, all your friends who have come over to play. All the avatars hang out in a room and walk around. That was my favorite thing. I was like, the games are fun, but I used to just like to watch the avatars walk around and bump into each other. Like, I'd bump into one of my friends, I'd bump into my ex-wife, and we would just aimlessly, people that I know in cartoon version, in one room, just bump into each other, walking back and forth. It became fascinating to me.
That sounds like a good way to spend 5 hours just watching.
Yeah. I was a drinking man at that time, too, so, you know, I was like, hey, let's get some booze.
Get the Wii.
Let's get some booze and watch our cartoon selves walk around a room for an hour and a half.
That's what I call television.
That's that's it, man. That's worth it. All right, couple more names and tech names and how they got their names. We'll tell those stories, and then we're going to talk about some of the actual non-successes of Apple. We'll do that after the news. Let's take a break right here, though. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN TV. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Who's the fan of men wearing funny hats?
That's Leany in Plainfield.
Oh.
Little Jamiroquai.
Jamiroquai. I always count on a funny hat. All right. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in at 312-981-720. It's any artist, any song, anything. Okay, a few more how tech companies and sites and gadgets got their names. Wikipedia. While the origin of the second half of the name might be rather obvious, the first half is still a mystery to many. Wiki, W-I-K-I, is used to describe any website content that is specifically designed to be edited by its users. The name was first coined by Ward Cunningham to describe software he wrote in 1994 that was meant to speed up the communication process between computer programmers. He borrowed the word from the Hawaiian language, where it means... Boy, Hawaii has inspired a pretty good amount of these. Hawaiian language, where it means fast. After hearing it in the Honolulu airport, when an employee told him to take the Wiki Wiki shuttle. Wiki Wiki Nikki is my nickname on Fly Jams Friday. But it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the sound it makes when you're doing the turntable. Wiki Wiki. When you're mixing. Many people mistakenly believe that Wiki is an acronym for What I Know Is. However, that definition was actually applied to the word after the fact, making it instead a backronym. See how they did that?
It's nice. It's a smooth move.
Well, nice. So, you know, the fact that Wikipedia, you know, we use that all the time. People use Wikipedia all the time. But you also have to have, you know, the fact that, you know, people, anybody can go in and, like, update Wikipedia. At one point, my Wikipedia entry, I don't know if it's still like that or not, but I have a Wikipedia entry. And it said that I was born in 1870. At one point, I had 27 kids. Clearly, people were just going in, because my listeners are goofballs anyway, and they were going in and just, like, completely adding absolutely untrue and blatantly ridiculous things to my Wikipedia page. So, I don't know. I don't know what it says now.
There's a lot of mentions of running jokes.
Yeah, like?
Well, let's see here. The one about Carrie Russell. Is it where
this?
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
Yeah,
you do, baby. Okay.
Liam Neeson needing to throat punch someone.
Geez, these are old.
Yeah,
I mean, I still do the Carrie. I mean, I play the any chance I get.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I want to hear Felicity talking about my show.
I mean, that's a. I would take that to my grave.
Yeah, are you kidding?
I'd bury me with that tape.
Kidding me? But yeah, I don't think it's been updated in a long time.
We can change that.
No. That's all right. So is it, do they date when they update stuff? Like, is it updated?
If you go into like the editor, like it'll tell you when certain edits were made.
Okay.
And all that kind of stuff.
Do I have kids?
Well, let's see.
Because I don't.
Nope, not mentioned.
Not mentioned, okay.
No.
So it's got to be old, right? Is my Walk of Fame mentioned on there?
It isn't. I don't think it is.
We can add that. My induction in the Walk of Fame is pretty important.
And
so
we'll
that
cut off there.
We could add that there. I wouldn't mind that. But so, it's been a long time and since anybody updated it. But there was a period of time in the early 2000s, you know, where mid-2000s, where people were going in purposely and, like, you know, adding a lot of stupid stuff to my Wikipedia page. And you know what's going to happen? It's going to happen now because I'm talking about it on the air.
We've done it now.
Yeah, I just realized that right now.
Well, they do have moderators.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know how much attention they're paying to specifically yours.
Yeah, no, they're not going to pay attention to me. I'm just some monkey who talks into a microphone. They don't care. And then finally, Prius. While developing the world's first mass-produced hybrid vehicle, Toyota believed that the Prius was going to be the predecessor to the cars of the future. To name their groundbreaking car, they turned to the Latin word Prius, meaning to go before, the root of our modern word prior. And with the growing popularity of hybrid vehicles, it appears that they were right about the Prius's legacy. What they couldn't have predicted, though, was that the controversy that the name would create when people wanted to refer to more than one of the cars, because many thought that the plural was pry. Others believed it was Priuses. The official word from Toyota used was that there was no plural form, and that Prius was like moose. All right.
A beautiful herd of Prius in the Canadian wilderness.
But then they said until 2011, when an online poll crowned PRII the official plural of the word. Okay.
Mm.
right, let's take a break. We've been doing some tech talk this morning, and we're going to talk about, believe it or not, Apple doesn't always have success. We've got some flops. And maybe you guys purchased some of these flops or decided not to because they weren't good. The news is coming up right after this. Tell him that the sun and the moon rise in his eyes. Reach out to him. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who the hell was that? Was that Celine Dion?
Yeah, Celine Dion and Babs.
Barbara Streisand. Okay, all right. What is that? What was the song?
The song's called Tell Him. I've never heard this.
Oh.
It's from 97.
Okay, 97. That's right when Titanic came out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right.
Coming to us from Michael from Iowa.
Thank you, Michael.
Hanging out in the corn state.
Thank you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking some tech stuff, how some tech companies and websites and gadgets got their names. And now Apple, which is, you know, like the tech king. and you mentioned earlier you're an Apple guy because you said you had an Apple phone.
My dad was an early adopter, pretty much refused to use PCs. And even when he was working for Motorola, like BlackBerry, like because Motorola didn't have smartphones at that time, everybody used the BlackBerry. The minute the iPhone came out, he bought one and he just went, he was in IT and he just went to his bosses and he was pretty high up, but he just went to everybody. He's like, yeah, I'm going to use an iPhone. They're like, no, but everything's formatted for BlackBerry. And he's just like, yeah, no. I'm going to use an iPhone. And then everybody switched to iPhone.
Why? Did he have an Apple pager?
Maybe it would have been cool then.
You know, well, you know, now that you, you know, because you were talking about pagers last week and how dorky and dumb they were. But you failed to mention that your dad was in IT. So that's that's why he had it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand the function.
Okay, I know, but I mean, I didn't know that he was in IT.
Yep.
I just thought he was a dude who was walking around with a pager.
I mean, that being a dork and working in IT kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, well, you know, Nick Burns, do you know the character Nick Burns?
Yeah, yeah.
Your company's computer guy that Jimmy Fallon played?
Yeah.
I love that character.
Oh, it's 100% true.
Absolute move! Like when he's trying to tell you what to do, something wrong with the computer. It's like, there's something wrong with the computer. It's not you. And that was back when Jimmy Fallon was funny. You remember those days when Jimmy Fallon was funny?
I used to have, when on the early days of iTunes, when they first came out with the video iPod, I had two things on the video iPod. I had the first season of The American Office and the best of Jimmy Fallon on SNL Volume 1. And that was all I watched.
Well, listen, you know, he was good on SNL.
He really was.
He was.
When he wasn't looking into the camera.
I can't stand him now. Yeah. He's the worst talk show host. He's a terrible talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked him a lot on SNL. I actually thought he did a good job on Weekend Update with Tina Fey.
Amazing bits.
Yeah, great bits. Now, it got a little tired to watch him and Horatio Sands break all the time because that was like their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like, okay, they're just going to break. But he was in two of the most classic sketches that involved the actors breaking. Obviously, Cowbell,
right?
Which one of the reasons why that sketch is so funny is just how completely unaware Walken is of what's happening on stage, because Walken is one of those guests, and he's fantastic. One of the hosts on SNL who requires a lot. He relies a lot on the cue cards.
Yeah,
he relies a lot on. There are times when he's just looking directly at the cue cards. He's not making. And during when everybody loses it during the Cowbell sketch. By the way, the only person besides Walken who's not. No idea what's going on because you're looking at the cue cards like, I got a fever, you know, that whole thing. Parnell's the only guy who doesn't laugh. Chris Parnell, only guy that does not break during that whole sketch. So, he and by the way, he's the only one who doesn't break in the other most popular sketch, he does not break in the first Debbie Downer sketch. Wow. Okay, so Parnell, man, pro. Well, he's always been a pro. I love that guy. I like the progressive commercials.
The little box.
Where he's the progressive box. I love Chris Parnell.
Oh, he's great.
He's great. Do you know that he got fired and Will Ferrell got him his job back?
Wait, really?
Yeah. Why he was gone for one season.
Why did they fire him?
I don't know. But Will Ferrell said, I'm not coming back if you don't bring Parnell back.
Mm-hmm. And I really loved him in, obviously, the Lonely Island skit, Lazy Sunday
is classic.
What up, Parnes?
Classic.
And Hot Rod as the AM radio host.
Yeah. Hot Rod, by the way, is a funny movie. I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, it's stellar.
Ian McKellen as his dad?
Ian McShane.
Sorry, yeah. Ian McKellen. Ian McShane as his dad? Come on! It's fantastic. That movie's
never
funny.
Sneak up on a man who's been in a chemical fire.
It's hilarious, man. That movie's hilarious. But anyway, So Parnell doesn't break in the Debbie Downer, which is one of the maybe the classic example of people losing it on SNL. Like at one point, Lindsay Lohan just walked off stage.
Yeah,
she couldn't do it.
It's too good.
It's unbelievably funny, and the funniest part. I mean, that whole thing, because it's, you know, an interview with Rachel Dratch, and Dratch was like, because during Dress, of course, because Horatio and Jimmy are in this, they're in the sketch, and they're right across the aisle from each other. They're right across the table from each other. And so I guess during rehearsals and during Dress, as usual, Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz were breaking, and they were losing it, and they were screwing up. And so Rachel Dratch, who wrote that sketch with Paul Appel, who's a brilliant writer and great on AP Bio, by the way. So she was like, Dratch was mad. She's like, man, they're going to screw this up. When we do this live, they're going to screw this up. And she's the one who messed up. And she's the first one to break. Dratch is the first one to break in that sketch. It is so hilarious. And it's the first time they did Debbie Downer. And Debbie Downer, by the way, is really funny even when nobody breaks. You know what I mean? Like, but in the subsequent Debbie Downer sketches that they did, they're all really, really funny because it's a funny concept. It's a funny character. But that first one, the Disneyland one, the Disney World one, oh, my God. I mean, I it's just so funny. And, of course, the moment in that sketch is after. I mean, at this point, the sketch is derailed. Okay? And everybody's laughing and everybody's just, like, losing it. And Dratch is gone. Like, you know, because they have to zoom in on her face so she can do a blah, blah, you know, that look. But she's like laughing the whole time. So, and now at this point, we're late in the sketch and it's gone. Everybody except for Parnell is losing it on stage and they're gone. Dratch is completely derailed at this point. So and her next line is, and she's laughing. She's like, well, it's official. Then there's a long pause and she goes, I can't have children. And that sends everybody. I mean, that's it, man. And at that point, it's like there's no any chance of any slight recovery in this sketch is gone now. Can't have children. man, I remember the first time, and that was back when Lindsay Lohan was great. That was when she was so talented and so good. Before
yeah,
that was
like Mean Girls era.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved Lindsay Lohan. I loved her in Mean Girls.
And
I loved
her twin.
And I loved her in Parent Trap. I loved her. I thought she was on her way, man. I was like, man, this girl. I predicted after I saw Mean Girls and, you know, she was in Prairie Home Companion. Mm-hmm. And she was so beautiful at that time, like really, really beautiful. And then it all derailed. But yeah. I predicted that she would win an Oscar. I was like, she's so good. I think she's going to have a really great long future and she's going to get an Oscar. And I think she could have, but she chose the party route and the plastic surgery route. And
it's unfortunate.
It's totally unfortunate because she was so great.
I legitimately thought that she had a twin sister because of the Parent Trap.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, yeah, oh, yeah. It's like Mary-Kate and Ashley. It's the Lohan twins.
Right, right. Well, they did that. Haley Mills was in the original.
Yeah.
And
but I was so young. Yeah. I was completely baffled by the movie Magic.
And a Freaky Friday with her and Jamie Lee Curtis was great. Oh. It was great. And Jamie Lee Curtis was terrific in that movie.
Oh, I'm like the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah. It's hilarious. So, anyway, I don't know how the hell we got on this. How did we get on this? Jimmy Fallon, we got to
talk about IT.
That's what it was. We were talking about the pager thing.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Apple.
That's what it was. All right. Apple.
We're back.
That's what we're supposed to be talking about. Let me give you a quick little background here. Last week, Apple did something that they rarely ever do, and that is the company canceled an already announced project, specifically AirPower, a wireless charging pad that would power up the iPhone, Apple Watch, and AirPods all at once. After 18 months, not a single AirPower device ever saw the light of day. The unexpected death of AirPower is an uncommon occurrence for Apple, which is so carefully nurtures its image as a buttoned-up company. The company rarely pre-announces a product so far in advance, and it even more rarely publicly cancels a project before it ships. The AirPower misstep especially sticks out among Apple's hit parade over the last 20 years, from iTunes to iMovie, FaceTime to the iPod, the iPhone, the Apple Watch, the MacBook Air. Apple's consistently rolled out great apps and devices for several decades, but every once in a while they had failure. We have 15 flops from Apple, and we will talk a little bit about those coming up here as we talk a little more tech this morning. So we are going to take a quick break here for some weather, and then we come back. We're going to talk about the Apple flops. If you're an Apple user and you were part of these, any of these flops were part of you that you participated in, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, high temperatures in the upper 50s, low 60s. Rain spreads into our area in the day, and a wide area, likely overnight. For tomorrow, cloudy, windy, damp, chilly with periods of rain. High temperatures in the low 40s, possible upper 30s. For Friday, highs in the upper 40s and low 50s. Brisk northeast winds become light and variable later in the day. Saturday, breezy winds out of the south will boost afternoon highs into the 60s. Rain likely overnight. And then on Sunday, showers and possible thunderstorms developing during the day. Highs in the upper 60s north to the mid-70s south. Showers and thunderstorms likely overnight. It is currently 40 degrees at O'Hare. It's 41 at Midway, 42 at the lakefront. Okay, some missteps for the powerful Apple company. That's what's going to be discussed after we take this break on 720 WGN.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cut away coat, perfect fits. Putting on the Ritz. Dressed up like a million.
Oh, yeah. There you go. A little taco on Wednesday morning here. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. That's any artist, any song, anything. Somebody requested some taco, putting on the Ritz. Who?
Our good friend Ike.
Ike requesting some taco, putting on the Ritz. Only hit he ever had. I think the only artist that should have ever recorded this song is Frankenstein and the Frankenstein Monster. It's Peter Boyle. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Okay, we have Apple's worst flops. Do you remember any of these? You're an Apple guy.
There's a couple of them that I remembered.
Apple cancels AirPower, the wireless charger, before its release. That happened just recently in 2019. Announced in 2017. Apple's wireless charging mat was designed to charge iPhones, Apple Watches, and AirPods simultaneously, and the devices could communicate to ensure that everything was charging efficiently. But this ambitious power mat missed its 2018 release date, and then late last Friday they announced it was canceling the project. iPhone batteries throttled and MacBook batteries exploding from 2017. You remember these?
Oh, yeah.
Following reports of older iPhones becoming unusually sluggish, Apple admitted it was slowing down older iPhones to conserve battery life. iPhone owners were displeased to learn that Apple had made that decision without their knowledge and consent. As a way to make good, Apple offered to replace those batteries for $29.95, swapping in 11 million new batteries by the end of 2018. Along with iPhone batteries, Apple has had over time to deal with scattered reports of exploding batteries in MacBooks and PowerBooks.
Yeah, this is a bad moment.
Yeah.
Because it just basically proved to everybody, I mean, we all know about planned obsolescence, but this was just, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was just sad because people turn to Apple. They pay a lot of money for Apple, and this is what they got in return.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of a really jerky thing to do without telling the customers. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We slowed down the phones.
Oh, who knows? It could have been in that pages-long end-user agreement that nobody reads and signs anyway. Yeah.
Ben Gate warps iPhone 6's upright reputation. This happened in 2014. Shortly after the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus shipped in late September 2014, YouTube seemed full of iPhone owners bending their Apple devices. I remember this. It was shocking, and you couldn't look away. Apple claimed only a handful of iPhone owners had flawed and bendable devices, but said it would replace the phones that showed manufacturing defects. For a year or two after, the overbendability of a new phone was a concern. I totally remember when that happened. And now they have phones that actually fold.
Yeah.
Like Samsung has one that that you can actually open it up and the screen gets bigger.
So what do you know? Apple was ahead of the curve.
How about this? By making a mistake. I totally remember this. iTunes spammed you with U2 2014. I remember when this happened. I was like, only Apple customers would be pissed off by getting a free record. That would be the I just like to promote U2's new album. Apple pushed the supergroup's "Songs of Innocence" to 500 million iTunes libraries for free. Instead of thanking Apple and U2 frontman Bono for the gift, many felt imposed upon at best or violated at worst. Stores that were counting on album sales became upset, as were other musicians who believe people should pay for music and not expect it for free. Then there was a good chunk of Apple's 500 million customers who felt Apple spammed them with an album they didn't want or consent to.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been different if it would have been, like, a good album.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I actually think that's not a bad album, but
I wasn't super thrilled.
The thing is that I can understand. I guess I can understand why people were mad about it. I mean, you get a free album by U2. I think that's pretty cool. But there is sort of a violation on that. It's like, what are you doing? You know, like you put this in without my consent. This has been put in there. I can understand why people thought it was a violation.
It would have been nice to get like a little message, like, "Hey, if you want,
click onto this.
Yeah. It's free through Apple." Blah blah blah.
Yeah. Apple Maps growing pains, 2012. Designed to replace the preload Google Maps on iPhones, Apple Maps came as the default map app for iPhone and iPad in 2012. Unfortunately, Apple Maps also came with a collection of serious issues, from faulty directions, oh no, to oddly distorted images. Apple Maps was CEO Tim Cook's first fiasco following the death of Steve Jobs in 2011, and it got so bad that Cook apologized for the unsteady app. Now, did you have the app?
Yeah. And you'd put in an address and it would put you into like a body of water. You'd follow it and then you'd be like, oh, wait, I'm actually driving into a lake.
Yeah. That's not good.
No.
All right.
Although I got a free car wash out of it.
Yeah. AntennaGate, AKA you're holding it wrong. The iPhone, this is 2010. The iPhone 4 employed a stylish stainless steel frame that wrapped around the device and housed the phone's antennas. When it was gripped just right, or just wrong, as the case may be, it reduced the phone's signal. Oh, yeah, I remember this. I totally remember this now. The signal strength that was shipped that June. Amid rumors of a recall and software updates, and even free phones, bumpers from Apple to keep fingers off the frame and its gaps, Apple apologized and said that the iPhone 4 owners could return their phones if they wanted. Yeah, I totally remember that. The loneliness of iTunes ping. From 2010, Ping was a social network designed to connect you to your friends and favorite musicians as part of a big iTunes update. Before its release, Apple showed Ping with hooks into, but when Ping shipped, Facebook integration had been pulled from Apple's attempt at social networking. Without Facebook, finding your friends on Ping was pretty challenging. And once you did find them, you often discovered that their musical tastes were as bad as you had feared. how about the wobbling mobile me from 2008? There was much to like about mobile me, Apple's collection of online services users could subscribe to for $99 a year. With it, you could sync your calendar and contacts. It offered online storage, Find My iPhone, a photo gallery, and even an easy enough to use web design tool called iWeb. Unfortunately, the service got off to a terrible start with potential subscribers unable to sign up when they were unable to access it once they did subscribe. The service never quite recovered. They replaced it later with iCloud. The iPod Hi-Fi Sky High Price, 2006, intended to replace your home stereo system. The iPod Hi-Fi was a bulky, expensive speaker that lacked an AM/FM radio, came with limited remote, and precariously docked an iPod on top. It sounded fine as an audio device, but potential buyers balked at its cost. It was at $349. It cost $50 to $200 more than competing products. And it had the inability to use it. You could use it with non-Apple audio players. The G4 Cube, cracks and all, in 2000. The G4 Cube was arresting, housed in acrylic glass. Oh, God, I remember this, too.
Yeah, this was like one of my first computers that was in the house.
The boxy Mac was also expensive. It didn't come with a monitor. It required external speakers. You could form cracks that marred the exterior of the Mac. Barely around for a year when Apple discontinued it in 2001. The 20th anniversary Macintosh in 1997. An all-in-one design that seemed more oppressive than elegant, the 20th anniversary Mac packed just everything that you could into the computer: an LCD display, FM radio, TV tuner, CD-ROM drive, a Bose sound system, leather palm rests, and also it was an expensive price tag, $7,500 at launch. Good Lord. It didn't quite look right, and it didn't sell, and Apple reduced its price by almost 75% later that year. And then Pippin, the all-in-one that never took off in 1996. It was going to be a gaming console, an internet appliance, a set-top box, a way for Apple to get into the living room. The Pippin, however, never caught on with buyers, software developers, or the hardware makers that it would license the multipurpose design. In 1997, Apple moved on. Now, I will say this. I had, back in the day, I had the iMac. The all-in-one iMac and we had the strawberry-colored one. It had the handle on top, and my ex-wife and I were very excited about it. And we used it for many years. I still have it in a box somewhere. I wrote a lot of plays on it. I can tell you that much. But one of the things I loved about it was that it was featured on in Felicity.
Oh, yeah.
Because Noel was a big-time Apple guy, and he called the iMac a thing of beauty, I remember. So, all right. Those are just some of the mistakes that Apple has made.
They tried.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, we're going to talk about 32 women who changed life as we know it by these great inventions. So, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you want to jump in with any of these topics, we're going to talk about inventions, specifically inventions that were invented by women. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we're here until 5 a.m. And that was clearly from Star Wars?
Yep.
What is it?
So it's the track TIE Fighter attack from Star Wars Episode 4, requested by Johnny in Plainfield.
Okay.
A very tense scene.
Okay. It's from which one?
It's from A New Hope, so the original Star Wars.
Oh, the original. Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. I don't know what the code names are for the I always forget that the fourth one is, you know, the New Hope one.
Yeah,
that's just Star Wars to me.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in the theaters when I was 12. So, all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We are talking about women who had great inventions. We've been talking about inventions. And things like that. We wanted to open up the phone lines if you want to join us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, let's see. By the way, this article that we're talking about that mentions all of these women that had great inventions, and we were talking about tech things and actually some problems that Apple had. I totally forgot that they had issues because, you know, they have such that reputation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of, you know, like having so much success and having so many like really, you know, passionate followers. But they did have some mistakes. So Okay. This article, by the way, was written by Jill Kayadish at popularmechanics.com. And it was published on March 31st, so it was a few days ago. March was Women's History Month. So this was published on the final day of Women's History Month, and they wanted to go back and look at some of the women who have made indelible contributions to the world. So in terms of inventions, things that they've invented. So let's get up. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's Clark on WGN. Hi, Clark.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for inviting me into WGN this morning.
Uh-huh.
Nick, I'm calling from Auburn, New York. And Auburn, New York is the home of the National Women's Hall of Fame. And Auburn, New York is the home of Harriet Tubman, mm-hmm. who, of course, was a leader in the women's suffragette movement.
Right.
And the Underground Railroad went right through the city that I live in. And the name of Harriet Tubman in Auburn, New York is legendary.
Right.
And
yeah.
I sincerely appreciate your broadcast, Nick. WGN is coming loud and clear into Auburn, New York this morning. You're
okay.
doing a great job.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. All right. So let's talk about this. Margaret E. Knight. Margaret E. Knight. Invented the brown paper bag in 1868. Wow. And school lunches would change forever. Knight invented a machine that folded and glued paper into the flat bottom paper bag, still ubiquitous today. A man named Charles Annan stole her design and patented. Of course, that's what happened. Of course, that's what happened. But Knight sued him for patent interference. She secured her patent in 1871 and went on to establish the Eastern Paper Bag Company. Good for her.
That's how you get them.
Yeah. Paper bags, man. The brown paper bags.
It's so weird because you just take it for granted. It's just like, oh, this always existed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's always been brown paper bags.
Yeah. Since the day of Christ himself.
Yeah, exactly.
He carried his lunch in a brown paper bag.
Exactly right. Let's see. How about this? Mary Anderson. Wow. She invented windshield wipers in 1903. That's amazing. And Anderson was an established real estate developer, rancher, and wine grower. On a visit to New York City in 1902, she noticed a trolley operator driving in the front with the front windshield open because the sleet kept icing it over. A year later, Anderson patented her design for the first spring-loaded windshield wiper. Car manufacturers spent two decades balking at the idea until Cadillac adopted it, and the rest is history. Why would they balk at the idea of windshield wipers? What was the name of the movie where Greg Kinnear played the guy who invented
Flash of Genius?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
It was intermittent, right? The intermittent wipers, right?
Yes.
They made a movie. They made a movie out of that. Did you see Flash of Genius?
I did. I thought it was pretty good.
You did?
Yeah, I thought that was all right.
Okay.
Of course, I just like Greg Kinnear. I think he's a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked him since Talk Soup, way back in the day. All right. I just think that's kind of a strange thing to make a movie about. But they did actually. They made a pretty good movie out of it.
Mm-hmm.
How about the one where how about the one where and I can't remember the name of this, where Michael Keaton played the guy who took McDonald's away from the brothers?
Ray Kroc.
Yeah, Ray Kroc. Well, I meant Ray Kroc. How would I? But what was the name of that movie?
The Founder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I know. Oh God, the guy from Parks and Rec.
It's Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman plays one of the brothers.
Offerman and John. Oh God, John Carroll. I can't remember. He played Marge's husband, the guy who designed the stamps. John Carroll Lynch, also a great filmmaker. He directed Lucky,
mm-hmm.
Harry Dean Stanton's last movie.
Mm.
Terrific actor, that guy. Nice guy too. He came. He's a really nice guy. He came to Flashback 1 year because he was in. He was the clown in one of those stupid ass American Horror Story series. He was like the weird clown guy.
Was it Freak Show or at least one
Freak,
of them.
It was Freak Show. Yeah. I've never gotten past, I watched the very first season of American Horror Story. I had issues with, but I watched all of it. And by the end I was like, oh, come on. Every single season after that, I've not made it past three episodes. Never.
I've never been a fan of,
Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, and I appreciate him.
Hold on a second. You didn't like the OJ miniseries that he did?
I thought it was good.
Oh man, I thought that was great.
It's probably the best thing that he's done for me. Like, some people really like Nip Tuck, some people were really into Glee.
I was into Glee. I was into Glee way past when I should have been. Because I was watching Glee and people were like, why are you still watching that show? And I'm like, because I love it. I loved Glee.
People, it had me for seasons one and two, and then I was totally lost. I was like, I'm not really... I can't watch this anymore.
Yeah. Well,
there's great stuff.
He's got a very distinctive style. Oh, I loved Feud with...
was that him?
Yeah.
Okay.
With Susan Sarandon and...
Betty and Joan. Betty and Joan?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Why am I blanking on... Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange.
Yeah. No, I did like that. I did not know that was Ryan Murphy.
That was Ryan Murphy, man. That was great.
To him. Yeah. Is he doing the Fosse Verdon?
No, that's not him. Okay. It's just... You know, the thing about Fosse Verdon is I can't... I mean, I'm... beside myself over that.
Sure.
It seems like it's Ryan Murphy because it's on FX and it has that, you know, because the Gianni Versace thing was, you know, that was also Ryan Murphy. And you just think, well, it's got to be Ryan Murphy. It's not him. But he did, like, kick the door open for that type of show.
Sure.
And he basically, FX lets him do whatever he wants to do. Like, I mean, you know, it's just they let him do whatever he wants to do. And FX is actually, I got to say, FX is one of my favorite networks. It's one of my favorite networks.
They know what they're doing.
I mean, Atlanta is one of the greatest TV shows, one of my favorite TV shows ever. They just renewed Better Things with Pamela Adlon for a fourth season. God bless them. And that's a show that takes so many risks. She's so talented. And now writing and directing every single episode, as well as obviously appearing in it. Ball in High School. I'm all set. So I'm sorry, but seeing Cobol here immediately brought back one of my favorite lines. It was one of my favorite lines, and it got a huge laugh every night. And when Mike Beyer was the actor who improvised, and he improvised him one night. Yeah, I took Cobol in High School, man. I'm all set. We just lost it, and then I was like, that's a keeper.
Keep
that one. We'll tell you more about Cobol coming up. But we have to break for the news, and more women's inventions right after this on 720 WGN. Got the whole night long red blues, washing everything. I got a ring around the collar, it smells like sweat. Dollar in the dryer, and it ain't dry yet. If you wear clothes, you gotta pay the dues. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. That means your requests, any artist, any song, anything. Who was that and who requested it?
So that was Joe Walsh with the All Night Laundromat Blues, and that's coming to us from Chanahan Tony.
All right, there we go. And we got more coming up here, so 312-981-7200. We are talking about some great inventions. We did a bunch of tech stuff this morning. Earlier on we had... a cybersecurity expert on to talk about the hackings and the cyber crimes that have been happening and how to prevent it and how to keep it from happening to you. We talked about other tech stories and how certain gadgets and websites and stuff got their name. We also talked about Apple and actually some of the mistakes they made. And now we're talking about inventions in general and particularly inventions that were invented by women. And we're talking a little bit about that. The piece that I'm reading from was published on March 31st, which was the last day of Women's History Month. So they wanted to, on the last day of Women's History Month, showcase some of the great women who have invented some really great stuff that changed the world. All right, so let's move on. Patsy Sherman Patsy Sherman invented Scotch Guard in 1952. Sherman had been assigned to develop a material that could be used for jet fuel hoses, but a fluorochemical rubber spill in the laboratory resulted in her discovery of Scotch Guard, a repellent for oil, water, and other solvents, which ultimately became the most widely used soil remover product in the U.S. Good old Scotch Guard. I love it when great things happen because of mistakes. You know what I mean? Or accidents. You know? And I know that there are plenty of stories like that, inventions that happen because of an accident. That happens all the time. I think those are kind of fun. Katherine Johnson, the orbital mechanics of manned space flights from the 1950s. During her 35-year career at NASA, this African-American mathematician was known for her abilities to manually process the complex calculations that sent the first Americans into space. Johnson's work was instrumental in launching the space shuttle program and is still used in plans for missions to Mars. In 2015, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama, and she's featured in the 2016 film Hidden Figures, which is a really good movie.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And, that's one of those movies, those movies where, like, it's a story that not a lot of people knew at all. And I'm one of them. I'm one of the people. I will tell you, I had no idea how instrumental these African-American women were, in the space program. I had no idea. Great performances all the way around. Really solid movie.
Especially Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, she's great.
Never would have guessed. I mean, I love her music.
Yeah.
She's great elsewhere, but when she stepped onto the screen, she's so confident.
She's also great in Marwin. She's great in Welcome to Marwin, the Zemeckis movie. Mary Jackson, is a character from Hidden Figures. In 1958, invented the supersonic pressure tunnel. NASA's first African-American female aerospace engineer, also featured in Hidden Figures. Jackson analyzed wind tunnel data and conducted aircraft flight experiments to improve the aerodynamics of planes. She'd earned the most senior title in NASA's engineering department when she chose to relinquish that salary and status to manage the Federal Women's Program and the Affirmative Action Program, where she advocated for women in science, engineering, and mathematics careers at NASA. Again, if you've not seen Hidden Figures, really inspiring, really, really good movie. There, you'll learn a lot, too. How about this? Marie Van Britten Brown. She invented the home security system in 1969. Van Britten Brown and her husband Albert invented the home security system in response to the rising crime rates and slow police responses in their Queens neighborhood. The radio-controlled wireless system operated a camera that would send images of entry points to a monitor or TV screen inside the residence. It was patented in 1969 and still in use today.
That's remarkable.
It's amazing. It's also come a long way, too. Now you've got these, these devices where you have the camera, the lens at your front door, and you can see anybody walking up, and you don't even have to be home to see them. And then you can use your phone and go, "Hey, get off the porch," and scare the hell out of the guys, and they run away. Have you seen those commercials?
Yeah.
You can actually monitor the safety of your home with your phone, even if you're, up 200 miles away.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
Yeah.
Well, now you can also set up with your whole home, smart home system, and, you can have different commands. Mm-hmm. I've got a friend who set it all up through his Google Home. He's got the smart lights, that change color and everything
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if he turns to the Google Home and says intruder alert, all the lights go green. The Google Home says, "What are you doing in my swamp?" And it plays All Star from Shrek.
Oh man. So torture via Smash Mouth? Yeah. Is that the idea? Is to torture the criminal with Smash Mouth?
I'd run away too.
Oh my god. Hey now. Yeah, now it's that. Oh my god.
Love that song.
Oh,
love it. God. Love it, love it, love it.
Oh man. God. Yeah, Smash Mouth. All right. How about this? Vera Rubin invented dark matter in 1960. This astronomer's pioneering research proposed that 90% of the universe mass has never been seen. her discovery of the galaxy rotation problem revealed the existence of dark matter, prompting the New York Times described as what they described as a Copernican scale change in cosmological theory. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Maria Gobert Meyer, 1963, invented nuclear shell model. Meyer developed a mathematical model of the atomic nucleus that describes its structure in terms of energy levels, which made her the second woman in history, after Marie Curie, in 1903, to win the Nobel Prize in Physics. Her model explained why certain numbers of nucleons made up for stable atomic configurations. During World War II, she worked on isotope separation for the Manhattan Project. After her death in 1972, an award was created in her name to honor young female physicists launching their promising careers. By the way, have you ever seen the movie The Manhattan Project?
No.
80s movie about a kid who... it's, I want to say if it was... Can you look up Manhattan Project? I want to say it was 1985 when it came out. Lithgow's in it. And Chris, I want to say it's Christopher Collette played the main character.
Yep, Christopher Collette.
And it's Lithgow. Christopher,
it's 86.
86. Who else is it? Who played his mom?
Cynthia Nixon.
Cynthia Nixon, right. Yeah, no, that's his girlfriend. No, that was his girlfriend.
That's his girlfriend.
Because she was a teenager at that time.
Oh, okay.
She was like 19 or 20 when she made that movie, or 18 or 19 or something like that. But no, somebody else played, an actress who I knew played his mom, who was pretty popular. And John Lithgow was like the new boyfriend. Like, mm-hmm. they were divorced. John Lithgow was the new boyfriend.
Is it Jill Eikenberry?
Yes, Jill Eikenberry.
Yeah.
That's who it is. So how do they describe, is that IMDb?
No, I'm on Wikipedia.
How do they describe the plot?
Well, it's a science fiction thriller film. The plot revolves around a gifted high school student who decides to construct an atomic bomb for a national science fair.
Right.
What the hell?
It's a great movie.
I mean, it sounds really cool, but that is a disturbing prospect.
Well, it's how he does it, you know, that's the thriller part of it. It's like, mm-hmm. is this kid going to be able to break in, you know, steal plutonium and stuff and all the things that he needs in order to make this thing. But it's an anti-nuclear movie.
I imagine
that's the message. Who does it list the director?
Marshall Brickman.
Oh, Marshall Brickman. Marshall Brickman was Woody Allen's writing partner.
Yep.
For many movies.
Yeah.
Directed a couple of other movies too.
John Mahoney's in it.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins, a very young Robert Sean Leonard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a really good movie. It's one of those. It's one of those movies that has totally been under the radar, but I remember when it came out, Ebert championed it. He went out of his way because nobody was really going to see it, and it came out at a time like there were a lot of these, you know, in a year there were, for some reason, there were a lot of like science based movies with teenagers in them. Like, of course, Real Genius, which is, you know, the gold standard, as far as I'm concerned, of science-based teen comedies. There was My Science Project. There was Weird Science.
War Games.
To
a certain extent.
To a certain extent, yeah. And then this, and it got lost in the shuffle. This movie, Manhattan Project, got lost in the shuffle. And I think a lot of people thought it was actually, I think because of the title, I think they actually thought it was a historical movie about the Manhattan Project. Yeah. And then they made a movie about the Manhattan Project with Paul Newman, John Cusack,
yep.
Fat Man and Little Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm trying to remember who directed that. Roland Joffe is who I want to say. I might be wrong on that. But Fat Man and Little Boy.
I mean, 4 out of 4 stars for the Manhattan Project from Ebert. You weren't kidding.
No, he loved it. He went well beyond, you know, like... I mean, I think he wrote an extra, like he gave it a review and then they talked about it at the movies. And I think they mentioned it because I think Siskel liked it a lot, too. And they mentioned it, you know, another time on a different episode, even when they weren't, you know, they had already opened. They reviewed it a couple of weeks earlier. They mentioned it again because they liked it so much. And I think he wrote an extra piece on it in the Sun-Times. It's a really great movie. If I don't even know if it's available on DVD. I don't have it. But
you know, it probably has it.
Odd
Obsession.
Odd Obsessions. Yeah. But yeah, so if you get a chance, if that's out there somewhere, find it, because it's
a
really terrific thriller. It's very exciting and it's also very funny. And everybody's great in it. That Christopher Collette, he was in a movie called First Born. Do you know this movie?
No.
First Born. Corey Haim, young Corey Haim, Christopher Collette, Terry Garr. Their father passes away. She meets a new guy who the kids immediately don't like, played by Peter Weller, who is up to no good. Look that one up, too. First Born. I want to say that was like 1987, 86 or something like that. Christopher Collette was one of those kids that had about a 3 or 4 movie streak where he was taking good roles and he was really good in them, and everybody predicted a great, great future for the kid. And then I don't know where he went. First Born, I believe Michael Apted directed that one. If I remember correctly, it was Michael Apted who directed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved that movie. And Peter Weller is such a scumbag in it.
And Christopher Collette, he's in Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember him in Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, he's Paul.
I don't even remember him.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
The only thing I remember about Sleepaway Camp is the ending.
That's how I recognize this guy.
You should check out First Born.
100%.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break here for some weather, and then we'll wrap up the show afterwards, after the break, with some more inventions that were invented by women, giving them full credit where credit is due, which is awesome. All right, let's check out the forecast at the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, high temperatures in the upper 50s to lower 60s. Rain is going to spread into our area late in the day, and the area is going to get wide overnight. For tomorrow, cloudy, windy, damp, chilly, periods of rain, high temperatures in the low 40s. For Friday, highs in the upper 40s or low 50s, brisk northeast winds become light and variable later in the day. And then for Saturday, breezy, winds out of the south. It'll boost afternoon highs into the 60s, but rain is likely overnight. And for Sunday, showers, possible thunderstorms developing during the day. Highs in the upper 60s north, almost mid-70s in the south. Showers and thunderstorms are likely overnight. It is currently 40 degrees at O'Hare. It's 41 at Midway, 42 at the lakefront. We'll take a break. When we come back, more talk about inventions that were invented by women, and then we'll wrap up the show right here on 720 WGN. Dream is always the same. yes. Who requested this?
That was Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah.
Tangerine Dream from Risky Business, my second favorite movie of all time.
Amazing band.
Tangerine Dream, yeah.
Yeah, I love their soundtrack to Thief.
Thief is a great soundtrack. The Keep.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of great soundtracks, and I mean, you know, this Risky Business is, that is a really special and seminal movie for me. It came out in 1983, the summer of 1983. And it really hit me like a ton of bricks, because that's the year I graduated high school. So it was the summer between high school and college. And although I wasn't a rich kid from Glencoe, I did have the same issues that every 18-year-old kid between high school and college had, and it was a very dark movie. People misunderstand that movie. It's a very, very dark movie with a tragic ending. I mean, the movie ends with the complete corruption of an innocent, and he still gets into Princeton. He gets into Princeton because he's a pimp. that's it. It's not a happy ending, and I love that score. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I was trying to remember some of the other things about First Born that I was telling you about, and I forgot that both Sarah Jessica Parker and Robert Downey Jr. are in it. And that was way back when they were dating, because they dated, you know, years ago, years and years ago. It came out in 1984, Terry Garr, Peter Weller, Christopher Collette, Corey Haim, and Sarah Jessica Parker, Robert Downey Jr. It is a really, really good movie. And Peter Weller is particularly creepy. He's a bad dude coming into their lives, and you gotta love Peter Weller. I love Peter Weller. I also love the fact that he's doing KFC commercials as RoboCop. Have you seen them?
Oh, I've seen them.
Hilarious.
Just so odd, though.
Oh, ridiculous. All of those Colonel commercials are weird. Have you seen the one now where he's making out with Mrs. Butterworth?
Yeah. just steering hard into absurdity.
Yeah, and creepiness. I think that commercial's creepy. And yeah. I don't know, Norton, you know, they've been having all these celebrities play, you know, the colonels over the past couple of years. I have no idea who the guy is. Do we know who that guy is? He's in the Dirty Dancing commercial where they do the mm-hmm. I've had the time of my life, and they do the Dirty Dancing move where he holds Mrs. Butterworth over his head. And then the one where he's like making out with Mrs. Butterworth. I don't know who that colonel is.
I'm going to find out.
But Peter Weller as RoboCop, those commercials are hilarious. Where he's, I don't know who came up with the idea. And I love the fact that it's Peter Weller, because when I first saw the commercial, I'm like, man, that sounds a lot like Peter Weller. And I thought it was just some voice actor, you know what I mean, doing Peter Weller. And then I found out, no, that's Peter Weller. That's actually Peter Weller doing that commercial.
I like the Reba one.
The Reba ones are good. George Hamilton as the crispy colonel because he's got the suntan all the time. Funny. But the RoboCop one, I think, is the one that I think they've gone way over the, you know, way over the their what they needed to do. So here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, you're talking about the Manhattan Project. Where I started working back in the 60s when I was a youngster, I knew guys that went to University of Chicago where they had Stagg Field, and the thing that they used to split the atom was underneath Stagg Field. And they said when they used to run that thing working to teach how to split the atom, the dust on Stagg Field would jump about 4 inches off the ground.
Oh, wow.
And they still play football on top of it.
Wow.
While they're doing this, you know, the centrifuge for doing the atom bomb.
Wow. Wow, that's fascinating. That's amazing.
Right. But it's just an interesting story, you know, because the spot's still underground. They never did destroy it. The whole stuff's under there, the tunnels. Man.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. All right, Bill, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Have a good morning.
Thanks.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. How about Jocelyn Bell Burnell? 1967, invented radio pulsars. As a postgraduate, Burnell discovered radio pulsars, highly magnetized neutron stars that give off a beam of electromagnetic radiation, effectively pulsing their light at the Earth as they spin. The 1974 Nobel Prize in Physics recognized this discovery, and yet Burnell was not a recipient because of her student status at the time. Oh. Here's another one. Stephanie Kwolek invented Kevlar in 1971. In 1965, Kwolek created a liquid crystalline polymer solution that could be spun into a fiber 5 times stronger than steel by weight and could be made even stronger when heated. Modern Kevlar, introduced in 1971, is now used in more than 200 products, from firefighter boots, parachute lines, and airplanes to bridge reinforcements, hurricane safe rooms, armored cars, and bulletproof vests. Woman invented Kevlar. All right. Let's see. What else we got here? We have since we were talking about a lot of tech, modern tech stuff, Rosina Badgski, robotics and AI, founder and director of the University of Pennsylvania's General Robotics and Active Sensory Perception Laboratory, and now professor of electrical engineering and computer science at Berkeley. Badgski has conducted leading research in machine perception and AI. Her innovative advancements in robotics and computer vision landed her a seat on the President's Information Technology Advisory Committee from 2003 to 2005. With more than 225 journal articles, 25 book chapters, 66 technical reports to her name, she was awarded the 2009 Benjamin Franklin Medal in Computer and Cognitive Science. So there you go.
Her next challenge, Skynet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like my biggest fear, though.
Skynet?
Yeah, Skynet. I remember once I woke up and was connecting to my Wi-Fi at home. Some neighbor of mine thought it would be funny to make their Wi-Fi Skynet, and it honestly gave me the creeps.
Really?
Yeah, because I just thought about it.
Well, people who don't know, Skynet is the company in the future which basically causes the machine apocalypse in the Terminator movies. Go Skynet.
Friggin' Skynet.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Well, congratulations to these ladies. And if you want to read the entire article, it's up on our Facebook page, as in some of the other stuff that we talked about, articles that we were talking about a little bit earlier. So like us on our Facebook page. You can check all of that stuff out. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Hey, do you have any baseball or sports paraphernalia? Do you have baseball cards or football or basketball, hockey, any sports paraphernalia? Michael Osaki is going to be here tomorrow, live in studio. Call up. Describe what you have, and he'll tell you what it's worth, and we'll talk more about the collectibles and things like that. He's coming by. It's the beginning of baseball season. We always get him in at the beginning of baseball season. So he'll be with us live in studio tomorrow morning to help you out with your sports memorabilia. All right, let's take a break. The news is up after this.